my favorite subject of all time, time travel. Dr. Bruce Goldberg. By the way, there was, and I'm going to be seeing it, I think, tomorrow. All right. This is my favorite topic. There is nothing I can think of more that I would like to do. I think I've watched every conceivable motion picture, read every book, done everything but turn on the machine I have with regard to time travel. Time travel. If you could actually move forward or reverse in time itself. Well, my guest is here to talk about that tonight. His name is Dr. Bruce Goldberg. And let's first find out, Dr. Goldberg, welcome to the program.
Oh, Art, it's always a pleasure to reincarnate on your fine Star Wars-oriented program.
Doctor, tell us a bit about your background, if you would, please, so everybody knows who they're listening to.
Surely. Well, I live in Los Angeles here. I have a degrees in dentistry and counseling psychology, a master's in counseling psychology.
Mm-hmm.
My first book, Past Lives, Future Lives, which was originally published back in 1982, was the first book ever written about taking people into the future.
Right.
And by the way, I was told, one of my Hollywood sources, that some of the technology described in my book, which was 17 years old now, is actually portrayed in Star Wars. I haven't confirmed that yet.
No kidding. You mean you've not waited in lines down in L.A. there?
No.
Don't blame me.
I've been practicing hypnotherapy. I retired from dentistry actually 10 and a half years ago. I've been practicing hypnotherapy totally for 25 years, regressing over 11,000 patients into 35,000, give or take, past and future lives.
You have regressed over 11,000 patients?
Individual patients, yeah. Over 25 years, yeah.
My God.
And that doesn't count group regressions or workshops that I do. My newest release book is Astral Voyages, which will be out almost as we speak very shortly, which will talk about all kinds of fifth-dimensional travel and going out of the body, which is one of the ways you can actually go back and forward in time, which we'll discuss. And, of course, the last time we did the interview, Time Travels from Our Future, is the only book, first and only book ever written, about detailing time travelers, actual time travelers from our future, names, dates, and places, folks, that are here today and have been throughout our history, acting like a chaperone aunt at a prom here.
Doctor, let us begin by detailing what you believe the nature of time to be. That's kind of basic to where we're going here.
Okay, time is the fourth dimension of the space-time continuum, technically. Now, what that means is that we have length, width, and depth, or breadth, if you will, and those are the three dimensions that our physical eyes by evolution can see. But time is the fourth dimension, as Einstein laid it out in his equations back in 1905 and the special theory of relativity in 1915, the general theory.
Right.
And so time, we can't see time because it's a fourth dimension. Our eyes cannot see anything beyond three. Now, beyond time, there are other dimensions that we call the fifth dimension, although technically there are 26 dimensions altogether. But time, you can think about it as mind in a way, as mind is thought and thought is time. So really, you know, when you're involved in the space-time continuum, when you're out of the body, you don't have awareness of time. When you're in a good level of hypnosis, time goes fast when you're having fun, if you will. So there is no time unless you're on the outside looking in. So time really is an artificial concept. We can't even demonstrate whether time actually even exists.
Time, then, really is only a concept that can be realized in the third dimension?
Well, yeah, we observe it and artificially call it time. You might think of it, to quote the old Beatles cartoon, the Yellow Submarine, a pigment of our imagination.
And maybe so, but we measure time, for example, our length here on Earth. Nobody seems to go past a certain amount of time.
Right. Unless, of course, you enter the fifth dimension, and then you can, for example, when people have near-death experiences as other forms of out-of-body experiences, which we'll discuss in case history tonight, then they can perceive the time that we call it, and they can do things like save their lives, change their lives, change other lives, do all kinds of things that we would consider to be physically impossible.
Okay, so the implication of that, obviously, is that time is a malleable thing. It can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So you could prevent, for example, your own death?
Yes. You can prevent your own death for a while. You're not going to be immortal, you know. This isn't Methuselah here.
Right.
But you can, for example, a classic case that we briefly described, and I'd like to go into more detail later, but just to give you an overview, one of my patients came to me from the East Coast to Los Angeles here into my office, and she was trained to do out-of-body experiences.
Right.
Of course, I'm sure she's going to be hot online to get the astral voyages, because it's all about 65 exercises. Anyway, she went out of the body, and she learned how to, she was a very good student, if you will. This is the end of June, or middle, end of June of 1996. She goes back to New York, where she's from, and she's going to go to Europe with her friends around July, if you will, mid-July. And she goes through the out-of-body experience, which, of course, takes you out of the body, therefore, into the space-time continuum. Therefore, you can now see past, present, and future.
Right.
She perceives herself going to Europe on a plane and crashing and dying. So she says, "No, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. I want to live.
Right.
I want to live."
Right.
So she decides, I'm going to wait about 2 weeks and leave at maybe the end of July, third or fourth week in July, and then I'll avoid that. Well, she did. The trip was fine. The flight she was going to leave on was TWA Flight 800, July 17, 1996. 230 people are on the astral plane because of that.
Oh, my God. You're telling me the truth here, right?
This is an absolute bona fide. In fact, this case is documented totally in, and the exercise how to do that is in Astral Voyages, how you can actually, her case is in there, but also how you can do what I call future viewing. It's a specific exercise in there, how you can actually do that.
Boy, well, what does that say then about, in other words, a lot of people sitting out there tonight are saying to themselves, and have always said, when it's your time to go, you're going to go. It's God's will. These are the things we say when people die. It's God's will. You can't do anything about it. When you're going to go, you're going to go. And you're saying, uh-huh.
Well, what I'm saying is that, number one, you choose your death. You choose your major events in your life, not predestination, but you choose the framework, as you say, as we call it. And not only can you choose and delay and avoid, at least for a while, death, if that's a concern of yours, but you can also, as we'll talk about later on, switch into parallel universes where you may have no choice but have to, quote, chronologically cross into spirit or die at the age of, say, 72. But in a parallel universe, you could be 120. You can actually switch into that universe, that parallel universe, if you will, and have that life and not even be aware of the life that you would have, quote, died on, say, 40, 50 years even earlier. You can actually change that reality, and there are many, many models to show that that's a reality. But going back to the concept of time, let me just break this down to kind of give an intro to the audience. This is like a tease, as you would call it.
Sure.
Tonight we're going to discuss, this is what I'd like to cover here tonight. Number one, we're going to learn about time machines, real time machines. The mathematical models about time machines. We're going to learn how time travel, how to do time travel today, now. Your listeners will be able to actually do time travel with very simple exercises. We're going to be able to talk about actual real time travelers from our future. Those of your listeners now that are clicking onto your website, if they click onto my website, which is on your homepage now,
they
can actually see Traxa, we'll discuss him, who is a real time traveler. This is, he's pictured in Time Travels More Future. He's a real, this is a picture of a real man from 1,500 years, actually 1,600 years in the future.
I'm headed to my own website right now.
All right. And now, so that's one phase. Secondly, we're also going to discuss art. You have a past life that's very relevant to time travel. In, you might say, in honor of Star Wars, in a continent far, far away, long, long time ago, namely Atlantis. We're going to also talk about... Your Atlantean past life is a biggie. I know we've discussed this briefly before, so I do have Art's permission for this. I'm not breaching any confidentiality here.
We briefly touched on it, but you did not give me the details.
Well, the devil's in the details or whatever.
Listen, under your name, Doctor, there are about a million links here on my website.
If you go down on the right-hand side, just scroll down, you'll see where it says there's a picture of a guy who looks like a surfing dude.
Well, what I'm wondering is which should I... Past lives, future lives, books, let's see, book. Where do I want to go?
You go down where it says, the time travels I have met is an article. It's about maybe two-thirds down the page. You'll see like a picture of a man, a blonde-haired man with blue eyes.
Is this on your website?
It's on the homepage of the website.
All right, and time travelers I have met, huh?
Time travels I have met. It's for those listeners, it's www.drbrucegoldberg.com.
Okay, I'm there.
You got it?
Yep, I'm there.
That blonde-haired surfing dude that it looks like is Traxa the Time Traveler. If you click on that, you click onto the article, which describes him in detail.
Now, see, my own page is getting so doggone busy that I can barely get in, so
okay.
I'll be working on this. Go right ahead.
All right. Now, in addition to Art's life, which is issue number two, then we're going to discuss a very interesting controversy concerning me. And this relates to your site, by the way, and your fans, and of course people who know me. Because of my intimate knowledge of time travel from our future that we discussed last time, we'll mention a little bit of tonight, is, of course, the only book that's really detailed about time travelers. So this is what's going on the internet. This is the rumors about yours truly. Dr. Bruce Goldberg, there's more to him than meets the eye, and I'm quoting from the internet. There are people who are accusing me of being a time traveler from the future, a double T, as I call them. Time travelers, I call them double T. Now, the question is, am I? We'll discuss that. It's very interesting.
All right. I am looking at a picture that says a time traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right one?
Yes, it should be. I don't have my thing on right now. I'm talking to you without a monitor in front of me. But it will say the article is entitled "Time Travelers I Have Met."
No.
You see that? See, I have web TV. I don't have a computer, so you know we have different.
Well, this says meet a time traveler, pictures included.
Okay, if you click on that, that should be it. That should then take you to the article that's labeled "Time Travelers I Have Met."
All right.
And that would give you Traxa, and that would give you a bunch of details with his picture there, and the details about who he is and how he is.
All right, your website is coming to a screeching crawl, so I'll get there eventually.
It's probably being hit on right now by a lot of people.
Yes.
So basically, we're going to discuss Traxa, and Traxa is relevant because let me just give you a kind of a reason why he's relevant here. Time travelers from our future, just to give a little interlude here, take names based on their mission. For example, like if you remember, like in World War II, they would have Operation Neptune. They would bomb an island, and they would use a name for that.
Sure.
So the name of the person takes in that century depends upon what mission they're on. Traxa is from the 36th century. We'll discuss him later. He comes back in time through teleportation, which is developed in the 35th century. And one of his goals, I have met him several times in hyperspace, and your listeners can meet him too. He's been confirmed, by the way. You do have an email that I sent you about one of your listeners met Traxa. If you remember the email I sent you.
I do, yes.
Yes. All right, now, Traxa's, I said to him, I said, what's your name? He says, my name is Traxa. And I said, okay, could you spell it for me? And he says, T-R-A-K-S-A. And I said, okay, what is your mission? Well, he's got a lot of missions, but one of the missions was to introduce me to you, Art. Right? So I know the names always are sort of like hints, and because these guys like to stimulate your mind. So he says, figure it out, doctor. So I said, okay. If I looked very quickly, and being a kind of a cryptogram nut, I spelled his name backwards. If you spelled his name backwards, it says Ask Art.
You kidding?
T-R-A-K.
That's right. It would say that, wouldn't it?
Captain's got a sense of humor too. Okay.
So,
now let me just give a little introduction, which was kind of cuter. I think this is for people who are listening. And time travel, of course, I know it's your favorite topic. It's mine too. And maybe it's because I'm a time traveler. We'll find out. But anyway, this is my suggestion to the audience: put your Jedi Knight equipment away. Fasten your seatbelts, set your phasers on stun, adjust your clocks to the appropriate star date, and be prepared for an e-ride into the fifth dimension and time travel. And may the Force be with us tonight.
Well said. I am now looking at Traxa, and this is a painting, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, this is actually a portrait that we'll talk about. In fact, I can do that now. It might be a little, because we're on him right now. Traxa looks like, now when I, the artist who did the portraits, if you will, for the time travelers that are pictured in Time Travel from Our Future, and Traxa was on page 25, those were done by an artist who I hired, and I gave her descriptions, and I said, would you please, you know, just take my descriptions and do an artistic replication. And these aren't photographs, they're portraits, if you will.
Right.
And I described, you know, four time travelers. There's the gray, if you will, the hybrid, the reptilian, if you will, and then, of course, the blonde, blue-eyed, Caucasian, 6 to 7 foot Marlboro man I described, a middle-aged
guy. These descriptions you're giving right now fit into two categories. An awful lot of people who have been abducted give descriptions of precisely the creatures you have just told us
right.
about. But that's abductions by what they believe are alien beings, and you're saying, uh-uh?
Well, they would describe the Nordics, and the Nordics are questionable.
That's
are
right.
They aliens? Some Nordics could very well be from the other planets, because it could be Pleiades. I'm not doubting that, but I'm telling you right now, there are nice little blonde, blue-eyed Caucasian guys in white robes who are from the 31st to the 50th century. That I can tell you, and that's what we're talking about here. This gentleman is from the 36th century. But let me just say what the interesting thing, though, is when the artist dear friend, did the portraits. You know, I approved three of them with no problem. The fourth one was the most important one, which was the Caucasian, because he's the head of a time travel team. And I said, you know, I described the middle-aged Marlboro man, and she gives me the surfing dude.
Yeah.
I said, I could have asked her to do it again. I said, no, for some reason. I said, I think I know this guy for some reason. As it turned out, after the book was published, I went to hyperspace, in fact, after our last interview, and met the man, and that's Draxler.
We'll be right back.
He went to a local department store just to do some clothes shop.
Los Angeles, here once again is Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Doctor, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, one of the things about time travelers from our future is they tend to speak fast, so I don't know if that's another clue to who I am, but...
Well, just try and move toward 45 from 78.
Okay. By the way, I don't want to tease your audience here. We're talking about time travel, and I don't want to make this a theoretical paradigm. So like I've done in the past, if your listeners out there want to experience this themselves, they can click on to your homepage and onto my website, the homepage, they can click onto the fifth dimensional travel exercise. That's a real exercise that will actually allow you to go back or forward in time. If you've got a computer, that's all you need. You can just click on. If you don't have a computer, and if only if you don't, then you're welcome to call my 1-800-527-6248, which spells out 1-800-KARMA, the number 4 and the letter U, and that will hook you up to my office, and you'll get the exercise sent to you with other background material. That all that information, of course, is on the website. So if you do have a computer, please don't call just the people who don't have computers.
1-800-KARMA for you.
1-800-KARMA for you. And those are people who want to email me because the lines get busy. It's KARMA, the number 4, the letter U, at webtv.net.
Okay.
Now, let's talk about real time travel. There's four kinds of ways to travel in time. The first kind is what we call physical time machines, and I'll review those briefly.
All right.
The second time is creating an enlarged black hole, which is how time travelers, beginning in the year 3050, actually come back in time. The third type is teleportation, which is my old friend Traxa, which is developed in the 35th century, where you don't come back in a space vehicle, if you will. You just teleport, sort of like beam me up Scotty without Scotty.
All right.
It's a physical body is actually taken back, not only into moving from one place to another, but also backwards in time or forward in time.
All right.
And the last type, of course, is the one you can do right now, which is enter the fifth dimension. Think of it as an out-of-body experience technique, and that's what the fifth dimensional travel is all about. So let's talk about the physical models first.
Yep.
Miguel Albert Alcubierre, I guess he's French,
what?
Developed the concept of hyper-fast space travel, known as the Alcubierre warp drive, or known as AWD. This is a result of Einstein's general theory of relativity, and what it simply says in lay terms is that space-time can be twisted, deformed, and even engineered by concentrations of mass-energy ratios. And when that happens, the region directly in front of a ship, a spaceship, if you will, contracts, while the region directly behind the ship expands. The net effect of this is that the ship is propelled on a weightless path through space-time. It creates a local distortion of space-time that will produce an expansion behind the spaceship and an opposite contraction right in front of it.
So in other words, it goes faster and faster and faster.
Basically, this takes care of the idea of having to exceed the speed of light to go back or forward in time, you see. So basically, the spaceship will be pushed away from the Earth and pulled towards a distant star by actual space-time itself, and the process reverses itself to come back to Earth, and therefore it takes a very small amount of time to complete a trip. Now, the only problem with Alcubierre's model is that it requires something called exotic matter. We're going to run into that again.
Oh, no, you're correct. I've had a number of theoretical physicists on the program. They've all said that.
Right.
We need exotic matter.
We're not going to get it for 1,000 years, but we do need it. They're working on it, by the way. I mentioned this last time, but it's worth repeating. The University of Alabama at Huntsville, Dr. Lee and Douglas Tour are working on a grant by the our tax dollars at work, trying to develop, through a superconductor, if you will, they use a superconductor, they're trying to develop exotic matter. But it's still going to take 1,000 years. Exotic matter, by the way, to define it, so people don't know what that is, exotic matter is not something you see on an X-rated website. Exotic matter has negative energy propagating forward in time,
right,
which is precisely the opposite of what ordinary antimatter is. You see?
Yes.
Okay. So now, The idea, by the way, this AWD, this Alcubierre warp drive, in addition to making interstellar travel to other planets possible, all right, hence knocking off the main argument against ETs today, it also will develop or result in time travel through this eliminating of the time dilatation problem. You know, when you exceed the speed of light or go to the speed of light, time goes slower.
Well, are you suggesting that such a machine, short of one that travels in space, could produce time travel?
Now, without exotic matter, it won't. You've got to have exotic matter.
Okay.
Bottom line to it. That's why we're not going to have that for about 1,000 years. By the way, you could leave on a Monday morning using this technique, assuming you had exotic matter. You could leave on a Monday morning, travel to 1,000 light-year journey away, speed of light for 1,000 years, if you will, return the following Monday to find everyone else, including yourself, has aged no more than 1 week. That's what Alcubierre's work, and by the way, they call this metric engineering is the actual field. It's been supported by such people as, it was actually first advanced by the Russian Nobel laureate, Andrei Sakharov.
Oh, yes.
And the American Nobel laureate, T.D. Lee, and it was further developed by a really brilliant man, physicist Hal Puthoff. I'm sure you know SRI.
Of course.
Background. Okay, so this is not mashed potatoes time. This is big stuff. Similar to it, or an offshoot of that, a little bit different model, was proposed by University of California Berkeley physicist Yakir Aronoff, who's well written up in literature. I'm sure you've read about him. He proposed a time machine similar to a giant balloon, which is it would instantly inflate or deflate, altering local space and time, and sort of like hurling the occupant, if you will, through time itself. So he's got a model out. Astrophysicist J. Richard Gotthoff from Princeton University has a mechanism using what they call cosmic strings, hypothetical string-shaped objects that
right.
may float through space and millions of miles long and weighing as much as many suns.
Yes.
And they're so massive that they would, according to Einstein anyway, alter the fabric of space-time, and this is important, in their time and vicinity. And Gott repeats himself. He says that that by flying just in the right path near two cosmic strings, a rocket ship could literally hurtle back in time.
All right.
The problem with time is that when you go back or forward in time, and I'm going to make this point, and we're going to reemphasize it as long as you want. When you do that, you cause a tear in the space and the fabric of space time. That is a problem. When that happens, you can have things like the weather problems we're having today. You know, your friend Peter Gersten used the term a virus in reality.
Yes.
I call the weather problems a virus in the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's Alcubierre's and the other models. Now, the biggest, the most well-known one was obviously Kip Thorne, the Caltech Pasadena here, astrophysicist, extremely well-known, as I'm sure you know who he is. He used the concept of enlarging the black hole, which is what's going to actually happen in 1,000 years by...
All right, stop. We're moving into the second one. Before we leave the first one,
okay.
The machine that will, in 1,000 years, make time travel possible. The obvious question always asked, and I've got to ask it is, if time travel is developed in 1,000 years, assuming we haven't blown each other to smithereens,
okay.
Then there should be the eternal question, where are the time travelers? They should be here.
They are here. They're in the fifth dimension. You can't see beyond three dimensions. The time traveler, as I mentioned in my cute little remark last time with you, was that a time traveler could be sitting between you and Ramona having coffee and you wouldn't see him because he's in the fifth dimension. You can't even see the fourth dimension. Neither can I. Nobody can unless you happen to be out of the body.
Well, that's an invasion of my privacy.
Well, you know, I have a little theory here that maybe one of these double T's, a time traveler, cute name I call them, by the way, they have a sense of humor. They refer to me as the B of G, and you are the A of B. So, you know, we're all initials here. I do feel the time travelers, the double T's, were somewhat responsible for your nice, conscious remnant of an out-of-body experience in the City of Lights last July.
Paris, yes.
Okay? Remember, if you never have a conscious remnant of an out-of-body experience again, Art, you'll always have Paris.
That's right.
All right. The second model, a main model, if you will, is Kip Thorne, of course. We have to discuss him. A black hole is, of course, a very dense collapsed star. It creates what we call a singularity, a gravitational field so strong that even light can't escape from it.
Right.
Okay. Now, do we have black holes? Well, they're theoretical models until a woman from UCLA by the name of Andrea Ghez, G-H-E-Z, from UCLA using the Keck Observatory on Mauna Kea, I assume that's Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
She found a supermassive black hole in the center of our galaxy that's 24,000 light years away.
Right.
It was written up in Discover Magazine last November.
Right.
And the Astrophysical Journal December issue would be in the scientific literature. So therefore, black holes are not a pigment of our imagination. They are a reality. Kip Thorne, Michael Morris, and Ove Yurtseva worked on a model for time travel in a scientific paper for Physical Review Letters, which you know is a very hard-nosed physics publication, scientific publication. Of course, you have to have exotic matter. And before, you see, if you don't have exotic matter, here's the problems. Wormholes will theoretically, of course, do time travel. The problem is a spaceship or human would be crushed by the gravitational throat caused by the singularity. That is prevented by exotic matter. Radiation sucked into a black hole would also burn you like a French fry, so to speak, to vapor, literally, without the presence of exotic matter. So you got to have exotic matter. Assuming exotic matter exists, and they have it, then this is Kip Thorne's model. He simply would use the exotic matter as a way of minimizing the stretching forces, and of course the heat, if you will, the radiation, and it solves all the problems of time travel. And the models are published in the scientific literature, and there's no argument whatsoever. What you would do with this technically would be, you would have to move one of the mouths of a wormhole that's enlarged now. Wormholes, of course, are microscopic now. You would have to move a wormhole off into space at the speed close to that of light, return it to a location near the other mouth, which now creates an actual time machine. To travel to the past, you simply enter the moving mouth and exit at the stationary mouth.
But to do all of this is going to require a civilization like a Type 1 or a Type 2, perhaps, that Dr. Kaku talks about.
Right.
That we're how far away from?
Well, remember now, we're Type 0, okay?
Yes.
Type 1 is only 150 years from now, and they're not going to develop time travel. Type 2 civilization, according to the estimates of Kaku and other futurists, is only 1,000 years. Coincidentally, that's the 31st century, which just happens to fit into the year 3050 when time travel is discovered, according to my research with the various 9 time travelers that I have had personal communication with, to say nothing of the 100 and some odd patients of mine who have had a communication.
Well, we have now talked about being able to change the nature of time, either that which has occurred or is going to occur. Very interestingly, that which may occur, mm-hmm. as in a plane crash or whatever else might come along that you might want to avoid.
Yes, well,
Doctor, I've really got to ask you about the classic paradox question. In other words, how can you change what is going to be without changing what's going to be?
Okay, the classic analogy is killing the grandfather.
That's
and what
right,
happened
that's
to
right.
you.
Yes, yes.
And here's what happens. Remember the concept of parallel universes. Hugh Everett III, Princeton University, you know, Princeton University is where Einstein worked for 30 years,
yes.
where Edward Witten is, and the Princeton and the exotic center where they do everything in the world that matters in time travel. All right, Hugh Everett III discovered parallel universes. So here's an example. Let's say I go back in time and I accidentally use a stun phaser gun, except it's not on stun, and I wipe out my grandfather. Now, what happens to me? Would I disappear as Michael J. Fox's hand did in Back to the Future Part 1? The answer is yes, but only in one parallel universe. In the other parallel, you can't possibly wipe out your grandfather on an infinite number of parallel universes, no matter how conscientious you are, and no matter how many trench coats you have on. You can't do it. So the thing is there is that, and by the way, John Wheeler, as you know who he is, brilliant man who used the concept of what's called self-consistency. The fact that I am here now going back in time to knock off my grandfather, so to speak, means that I'm present in the year 1999, if you will. Therefore, I have to exist.
But here you would blink out.
Only in one parallel universe, not here necessarily. Could be another parallel universe. We don't know what parallel universe my grandfather would be on, you see? He doesn't have to be on the same exact one.
Well, you would be on this one, wouldn't he?
No, not necessarily at all. There are parallel universes. It's like a pinball machine. When you put that little plunger back, you don't know where that ball's going, you know? Unless you're Uri Geller or something, you don't know what's going on. It goes wherever it goes. It goes wherever. But let me give you a quote. Here's a quote from a very short one, thank goodness. Kip Thorne's quote from his Physical Review Letters, 1988. By the way, the references are all in Time Travel, Smart Future. There's 75 references. Here's what he says. One can imagine an advanced civilization pulling a wormhole out of the quantum foam and enlarging it to classical size. And here's another quote, which is even more significant. From a single wormhole, an infinitely advanced civilization can can make a time machine.
Yes, but I've got to be able to wrap my mind around the concept of if you were to kill your grandfather, in other words, in this timeline, in this dimension, the one we all live in,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Goldberg would be... We wouldn't even know about
it. We wouldn't, but see, you're making an assumption, which is unfortunately a false assumption. I understand why you're making
that
assumption.
Well, help me.
All right, here's the situation. You go back in time, it doesn't mean you're on the same exact parallel universe you're on now. This is parallel universe number one.
Yes.
In my five parallel universe paradigm, there are an infinite numbers, but my experience in doing about 7,000 progressions is that there's five major categories and infinite numbers of subsets in each category. For you physicists out there, please don't write me nasty letters. I'm trying to make it simple for the folks out there. I'm in parallel universe number one. I go back in parallel universe number three, and the grandfather dies. That means I don't exist in parallel universe number three, in which I'm not on the air with you because it's a different parallel universe, which means events are different. Even though the people are the same, the events aren't the same.
But
for example,
if you kill your grandfather in this universe, in this dimension...
Well, if I did that, technically, you would be correct. I would then disappear and dematerialize. However, my experience is that when people go back in time and go to parallel universes, they don't hang on the one they're on now.
But couldn't the effect be so very much larger than that? Not just that you were gone, but that you weren't here to talk about what you're talking about now, that minds didn't open up, that somebody out there didn't go click mm-hmm. and begin traveling in time or finding a way. And the implications of that, of course, could be enormous in this dimension.
Well, you know, there's something called, okay, you're bringing this, I'd like to deal with this a little bit later on when we have more time to develop it. There's something called paragression. And paragression is sort of like the TV show Sliders, where I've actually had patients of mine, and I've done this myself, they've gone into parallel universes where, you know, Hitler won World War II, and the British beat the Americans in the Revolutionary War, you know? Those parallel universes do exist out there. So you see what I'm saying? You see how different they are? Same people, different results.
Actually, a universe where Hitler won.
Yeah. I'll tell you what happened, though, just to make it simple. It wasn't real cool. Hitler won World War II because we didn't go in there until we were isolationists until all the way. We just refused to go in. Hitler wins World War II, France and Britain surrender, yada, yada. At the same time, 30 years later, in 1975, the Earth gets hit by an asteroid, and there ain't no human life. So Hitler didn't enjoy it very long. That's a real parallel universe.
That's fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Are you really sure of that?
Oh, absolutely. I've had it confirmed by several sources. And it gets even more. It gets even more. We'll go into others. There's others that are even more significant. This is that's only one of many situations. There are parallel universes where RFK wasn't assassinated. JFK is always assassinated, but RFK wasn't.
JFK is always assassinated, but
anyway.
Why? In other words, why wouldn't there be the difference? Why would there be a commonality in the case of JFK through the various dimensions?
Well, it's just that I'm sure there was at least one dimension where he survived. I just don't get that in my research. I mean, people just don't. You understand, this is not an exact science where you can sit there and, like, you type in a computer URL and you get a particular website. This is something where you take what the Lords of Karma give you. And nobody has described that, but people have described RFK surviving, and they've described some other of the events, Hitler surviving, which is not necessarily a plus to the universe, but, come sell here.
Yeah, all right, Doctor, hold on. Fascinating stuff. Can you imagine JFK doesn't survive anywhere, but RFK does? Time travel. Oh, I wish. By the way, my newsletter. And in there, there is an article entitled Time Travelers I Have Met by Dr. Bruce Goldberg. And he talks, of course, about Traska, which backwards is Ask Art. And this was in a previous edition. I would have to check and see which. Let's see, I believe it is What edition was that in, Doctor?
February.
February.
Should be the February issue.
February issue, all right.
I list four other time travelers there, too. We'll be discussing, there's actually nine. These are people that I've had. These are not just some patients. These are my personal communication in hyperspace by using the fifth dimensional travel exercise that we're referring to. And by the way, just again for your listeners that maybe just tuned in, if you want to get that fifth dimensional travel exercise that will actually allow you to go back or forward in time, you can click onto, as of right now, Art's obviously homepage, or you can look me up under the previous guest page, or if you just want to type in www.drbrucegoldberg.com. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a computer, simply call my 1-800 KARMA, the number 4, or the letter U, which is 800-527-6248. And you can also email me at KARMA, the number 4, the letter U, at webtv.net. And you'll get the exercise, and there's about 20 articles, the article you're referring to, and about 19 others about time travel, regression, progression, psychic self-defense, everything in the world you can imagine about all my 11 books are on the website. So there's a lot to, they'll keep you busy.
Well, I know that you know something about me. Now, it certainly would be true of me, I can tell you this day, this moment, or any other, that if I had the opportunity to travel in time, Doctor, I would do it.
Well, you have done it. When you left the body and you shot up out of that shotgun, as you described in Paris, you actually, when you were over Paris, you were not on the exact date that you left. You actually were doing some time travel. But let me give you just I kind of tease this in the first hour. Let me just kind of do a little thing, if I may. Let's talk a little bit about a continent far, far away, long, long time ago, known as Atlantis.
Yes.
50,000 B.C. Art was a quantum physicist and a research geophysicist by the name of Draco, D-R-A-K-O. You worked on mathematical models, no devices, but the mathematical models, which, by the way, are sound models, according to my contact with the time travelers, who know of your work, if you will, which were on time travel. They were actual, real models that had Atlantis not have gone down, because Atlantis went down three times, and one of them was 50,000 B.C. Mm-hmm. You were known sort of like, you weren't on the radio then, but you were, although Atlantis did have radio and TV, you were like a Carl Sagan, if you will. You were like, you know, the person who would call in to the WALATL Atlantis station to comment on what's going on.
Yes.
In the field of physics or geophysics or whatever. Okay. Now, you, by the way, Atlantis had two forms of religious worship that were known. One was bull worship, and the other was cat worship. And you were in the cat family. Okay? Wow. Ramona, by the way, was your wife then, too. Her name was Myra, M-E-I-R-A-H.
Okay. Really?
Yes, that's what's her name. Now, you worked out these mathematical models, and what you also did was very interesting. You discovered through your own research that you predicted the earthquake. Now, let me show you how this correlates to your life today and your main interest today, and other than time travel, but also, you know, what's going to happen, right? Y2Ks and all kinds
of course.
You knew there was going to be an earthquake, and you knew it was going to be in the center of the continent of Atlantis, which was in the Pacific Ocean. So you wanted to let the people know to get them out of there. Well, nobody wanted to hear it. You know, they just said, you know, Draco, get a life, whatever.
So in other words, nothing much changes, really.
Except, there was a news reporter. Now, see, in the days of Atlantis, the medical news reporter was somebody who we would call alternative medicine. In other words, it would be a reporter would say, chakra balancing cures a tumor, film 11. You know, I mean, it was all metaphysical and what we call alternative medicine. There was a man by the name of Forat, F-O-R-A-T, who was the only one in the media who would allow you to go on television and inform the population of the catastrophe. And he risked his job by doing it because it wasn't real cool to do it in those days.
That's an astounding story. How did you come up with all this?
Well, actually, I did what's called, in astral voyages, there's a technique called accessing the Akashic Record, and there's also a tape on that.
That's right.
Where you can actually access not only your own Akashic Records, but you can actually which means your records of past, present, or future, or even parallel lives, but you can also do it to other people. This is what psychics do, okay? So I was doing one of this. I was using my Access the Akashic Records tape. I was just playing one of my tapes.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
All right, and so I get this. Now, let me tell you, so it gets a little more interesting. So now Forat says, okay, you can go on the air, and of course Forat gets kind of in trouble for it, but, you know, you're doing your thing. Most of the people ignore you. About a third of the population was saved, including your wife, Myra, including Forat. He did a 23 skidoo, and he left too, so he was saved. About a third of the population was saved. 50,000 B.C., Atlantis splits in half. It doesn't go down. It just splits in half, killing hundreds of thousands of people into two islands. One was called Poseidon, which is also Atlantis, and the other was called Antilla, which some of the ancients, like the Greeks, would call Og, O-G, if you read the literature. Well, you went down with the ship. This sounds like Titanic here, you know? One-third survived, you know? All right. Well, at the same time now, so let me just say something very interesting. When you do an Akashic Record scan, you can also find out if you've known people in past lives today. The reporter Forat, who you saved, who was kind enough to allow you to inform and save hundreds of thousands of people, is somebody that you know today. And that person, folks, is yours truly. And let me tell you why this is significant.
I thought you were going to say Steve Benson or something.
In 25 years of doing this work and being a media consultant, if you will, for 20 years, I have never discussed ever any of my past lives except for now.
You're saying that you and I knew each other.
You and I are karmic good buddies, and I owe you one. And if I was a drinking man, I would say, Art, this, or I should say, Draco, this Atlantean ale is for you.
Ha, 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 ha. You know, if you weren't a doctor, then there might be a doctor out there somewhere listening to all this who would have you taken away in a white coat.
Well, you know, think of it, though. Look at the logic here. You're involved. You have a background in engineering.
Oh, right? No, look, it all fits.
It doesn't fit. With all due respect, some of the pessimism about things like governments and things like that, and I don't blame you.
Oh, absolutely. Right? I mean, you've got it all nailed.
And you have it all nailed. Let me tell you something. A lot of people, you know, a lot of those people you saved haven't forgotten that, okay? So this is the thing about karma. When you do nice things, it does reward. When you do not so nice things, it comes back to haunt you.
That's like kind of like cats. They were once worshipped by the Egyptians.
Sure.
Cats have not forgotten that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that, I mean, look at the people you know now, not just me, maybe the Richard Hoaglands, maybe the Linda Moulton Howes. You know what I mean? You could list those on. You've got some good buddies out there. And
I do.
And I definitely consider you a very good buddy. Not just before I found this out, by the way. This makes it even more, okay? But so anyway, that was your Atlantean life. Now, let me just talk something about the show. By the way, when your listeners do click on to Traxa and you look at this guy who looks like a 22-year-old surfing dude from Malibu,
right.
This gentleman is 75 years old from the 36th century. I wrote a book called Look Younger, Live Longer about slowing and reversing the aging process. So you live to be 120 to 140.
Right.
The time travelers, they like it, but it's sort of like a joke to them because they live to be 500 to 900 years old. So, you know, it was a nice start, but they have it over my work, if you will. Let me talk something about, this is important, about Men in Black and about time travel.
All right, stop. My name was Draco, right?
D-R-A-K-O.
Okay, that wasn't short for draconian, wasn't it?
No. This has nothing to do with reptilians, and this has nothing to do with draconian. You're talking about draconian. No, this is like, you know, many years ago, a patient of mine on the East Coast, and I still have the button, she gave me a button that said, my karma ran over my dogma.
That's good.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about now, there are Men in Black in the future. There are Men in Black, you know, we discussed this in detail last time. If your listeners want to hear a complete discussion, obviously they can get the archive from the network. But there are Men in Black in the future who would not appreciate time travelers making themselves known. And they also trace them down, they watch them. But there's something called a timeliner.
Well, now, they wouldn't appreciate what you're doing right now.
Well, now, this is one of the clues here. Am I a time traveler? I'm not saying I am, and I'm not saying I'm not. But I'll tell you why I wouldn't be worried about the Men in Black.
Wait a minute. Why are you evading the question?
Because, you see, if I was a time traveler, I could not answer that question. And to me, my whole life has been, and this is one of the clues, that I always stimulate people to draw their own conclusions. So why should I give somebody fish? I'd rather teach him.
So, Doctor, you really are telling us between the lines, aren't you, that you are a time traveler?
Well, you're making that conclusion, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will too, but as they say in the network media, I will neither confirm nor deny.
Well, that's good enough for me.
All right. Let's talk about timelines. You're going to like this one. Traxa was not one of these, and this is what's called a timeliner. A timeliner is a time traveler who lives on the same physical plane. Doesn't have to be the same. I mean, they can move around from one country to another, but they have to be, let's say, in 1999 as an example, for that same time period for 5 years consecutively or longer. If they do, they become a timeliner, which means the Men in Black, using their tricorder devices, whatever they have there, cannot trace them. If a time traveler goes on the Earth plane, the physical plane, the Men in Black will automatically be activated, and they'll know where they are, and they'll zero in on them. All right, and they'll watch them carefully, they can censor them, and they can kill them. So therefore, it's not cool to not be a timeliner. Since there are many records to show, and this, by the way, another hint, there are many records to show that I've been on this earth for at least 5 years. So if I am a time traveler, I'm a timeliner, and that's why I don't worry about the Men in Black. If in fact I was a time traveler, but I'm not saying I am. But anyway, timeliners are most of the time travelers are really not timeliners. They kind of come and go. Traxa is not a timeliner, which is why he's not in your studio tonight. Where Traxa is, by the way, right now, he has changed names because he's gone back. And he did this about October of last year. He'll be coming back in July. He is now in Lemuria, the old continent of Mu.
Yes.
One before Atlantis. 101,637 B.C., and what he's doing is he's defending the Earth against an E.T. war. His name is Etwar, which stands for E.T. War in Lemuria. Now, he actually lived two other lives as time travelers. One was in the 32nd century where he was killed in this very same war that he's defending now. He was also living in from the 34th century and went back to Atlantis where he was also fighting E.T. wars. There's been a lot of E.T. wars on this planet. And his name was Lyrat, L-Y-R-A-T, which stands for Lyrian, the extraterrestrial that he was fighting, and AT stands for Atlantean, if you will. So he was involved there. This is his third life. We know he's going to survive because one of his colleagues, who I've met, by the name of Muat, which stands for Mu, like the continent, and Atlantis, he is Traxa's supervisor, and he's from the 40th century, and Traxa is his buddy, so therefore we know Traxa lives to the 40th century, where he's nearly 500 years old.
All right, what we know about, it's hard to imagine other dimensions. No, it isn't. I can imagine them. But with regard to ours, if time travel is real, then we should be able to know certain things that are going to happen in our dimension.
If it's in the universe's plan, and if it's not going to be used against the common good or your own personal growth, there's a big difference. We're not going to sit there and be Nostradamus and sit there and say, read tomorrow's news today. That won't happen because the universe doesn't particularly appreciate that, you see? Also, it would have caused so many interferences in other people's lives. People wouldn't get out of bed. They would just do my Akashic record scan all day long or access their higher self or use my meter time travel to tape and just meet Traxa or one of his colleagues.
Well, isn't there that danger anyway?
Yeah, no, it's not a danger. You can get obsessed with anything. You could be compulsive shopping and watch the Home Shopping Network if you want. You know, I mean, people will do that. But I don't deal with people. I treat obsessions, but I've never treated a patient who was obsessed with alpha levels and couldn't go to work or couldn't get on with their lives. If anything, these techniques allow them to get on with their lives because it removes a lot of the problems, the habits, the phobias, the procrastinations, the...
Watching the Home Shopping Channel all day. I'd rather be tossed into the Victorian age.
Have you any idea how many women out there, and these are usually with all due respect, mostly housewives, have you any idea how many women are compulsively spending $20,000, $30,000 a year on the Home Shopping Network?
No, how many?
Oh, a lot. Thousands and thousands. Ask any therapist. We see them.
They, too, should be shot back to the Victorian age.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. So basically, now, the way this works, I don't know all the technology. They won't release it to me, but apparently there's some sort of a fifth-dimensional computer chip that's used by the 35th century time travelers beyond all the way to the 50th century, which allows them to hook up with some sort of massive fifth-dimensional computer, which allows them to teleport, because in the 35th century, they don't need enlarged wormholes, and they don't need spaceships. They can actually teleport back in time by using a device that looks like a camera that's sort of like strapped around their white robe. Caucasian time travelers always wear white robes, by the way. They always have blonde hair. They always have blue eyes, if you will,
and we normally would not see a time traveler, but they, on the other hand, can slow down their frequency and be seen. Is that correct?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what I described in the article and also I describe it in my other articles on the website, Traxa did something very interesting. He was in Chicago a few years ago attending a scientific convention, so he actually had to don a civilian uniform, if you will, you know, wearing a suit rather than his white robe. They don't like white robes in scientific meetings, you know?
Gotcha.
Unless you're an SNA, you know, they kind of throw you out, yeah? Well, he went there, and he then, of course, decided to... He had his folder with him, of course, which had some 36th century data with him, so he was attending the meeting. He was trying to, guide them a little bit and kind of help them out a little bit, but he was physically there. And then he dematerialized, because that's what happens in teleportation. You dematerialize, you disappear, and then you reappear wherever your location is, your destination is. A private detective was in this big building in Chicago and saw Traxa dematerialize. He was on his lunch break, all right?
Now, really?
Really. This is a true story. Now, what happened was that, so Traxa goes back to his little, you know, fifth-dimensional thing. He says, wait a minute, I forgot my folder in the scientific room here, the auditorium, wherever he was in. So he actually had to dematerialize from the hyperspace, rematerialize on the same building. The private detective was just frozen there. He said, what is going on here? Are they filming a movie? I'm going to stay here. He stayed there for about 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Traxler rematerializes. Now he sees the private eye following him, okay? So now Traxler gets his folder, leaves the building, walks to a local coffee shop. The private eye follows him into the coffee shop. Hmm. Traxler ordered the proverbial apple pie and coffee, goes into the restroom where, of course, he disappears and rematerializes into hyperspace. The private eye bribes the waitress to get his coffee cup with his fingerprints on it, right?
Yes.
And he runs a check with the FBI and Interpol, and of course he gets nothing because how are you going to get fingerprints on a man who doesn't live for 1,600 years?
You're not.
That's the point. So Traxler plays little games, you know. Time travelers have a tendency to have a sense of humor. Gee, just like me.
Well, good. Hold on right there. We'll be right back from the high desert. Dr. Bruce Goldberg is here, and we're talking about time travel.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back again, and just for your listeners, too, I will be this weekend in Montreal talking about time travelers and about psychic self-defense, and I'll be in Spokane, Washington on June 5th, and the Art Bell Chat Club, Montclair, California, July 10th, and all that information, of course, they're all posted with contact numbers on the website, or they can call my 1-800-527-6248 number for details and specifics. One thing I'd like to discuss is an example of teleportation and time travel.
All right, try and slow down.
All right. 1996, a 72-year-old woman came to my Los Angeles office. I'll call her Ava.
Yes.
She always wears, and her MO, a yellow scarf, ever since she was a teenager.
Yes.
When I saw her, she was a slender woman, and she's a slender woman now, but she had a weight problem up until she was about 50. Remember, she's 72 now.
Okay.
At least in 1996.
Yes.
She has always lived in the same city, and a very unusual event occurred. So this is what she tells me. She went to her local department store just to do some clothes shopping, as is her thing, wearing her yellow scarf, and she saw this young woman around 40s or so, mid-40s,
yes,
who was overweight, who wore a dark brown miniskirt, which, by the way, was Ava's favorite miniskirt 30 years ago, with a yellow scarf and a light green blouse. This woman, and there was a blue ink stain on the back of this miniskirt on this woman in her mid-40s. This woman looked like Ava did when she was in her 40s.
Wow.
All right? Now, and she's wearing the yellow scarf and this miniskirt. The only thing wrong about this miniskirt that Ava had in the 40s, when she was 30 years ago, I should say, was that it had this blue ink stain. The woman, Ava, decided to approach this woman, stood right in front of her.
You're not supposed to do that.
Well, you can. And got a good look at her and just was about to begin a conversation. The woman in her 40s dematerialized, not only right in front of Ava, but also in front of a customer who ran out of that store like a bat out of hell.
In other words, she ran into herself and poof.
And poof, but it was also witness.
And you've got witnesses.
And witness, well, one witness anyway. Now, I said to her, okay, I said, Ava, let's go back a little bit here now. Tell me some of the reality here now. Was this brown miniskirt? Yes. I said, do you have any pictures of you when you were in the 40s? And she said, no, it's interesting. She had to do some research from her family, like, you know, daughters, whatever. She had no pictures of her at that age.
Huh.
After researching the family album, she found a picture of herself in her mid-40s, a daughter gave it to her, or granddaughter, wearing a yellow scarf, the brown miniskirt with the stain, and the light green blouse. Now, I said to her, okay, let's one more question. Do you remember anything 30 years ago where you had a problem with time? And she said, you know, there was one incident 30 years ago approximately. One afternoon, she had a blackout for about an hour or two. All medical tests were negative and never had an occurrence again. What happened? Ava became a time traveler for 1 hour in 1966, traveled ahead 30 years in time, and returned to her point of origin.
Oh, that's interesting. By the way, the miniskirt era in itself is enough reason to justify time travel.
Yes, without the stain. All right, now, here's an example of, I'll tell you something.
No, wait, stop.
Oh, yes, yes.
I want to read this to you because it relates to what you just said.
All right.
It's from Dan in Los Angeles, right there with you.
Okay.
It says, Art, about four times a year, I wake up, I look at my clock, I see that I have an hour or so till my alarm goes off, drift back to sleep, then I wake up again, look at my clock, and see that I have 2 hours until my alarm goes off. In other words, The second time I wake up, it's earlier than the first time. Has the doctor ever heard of anything like this happening?
It's called a false awakening. I described that in real detail down in Los Angeles in Astral Voyages, the book out in the next couple of weeks. It's called a false awakening where you wake up and you're actually in an alpha level. You're out of the body in a dream level, if you will, which is really an out of body. And you think you're awake and everything looks like you're really awake, but you're not. You see?
Sure.
Still asleep. But you think you're asleep, you think you're awake, and that's where it's called a false awakening. It's very well documented.
Might it be known by you, in whatever way you can tell us, how and who built the Great Pyramid of Giza, and how and who will destroy it?
Well, I don't know about the destruction of it, because it does seem to last into the 50th century.
Really?
But I'll tell you who built it, though. It was built by the most of the people who built it were extraterrestrials from the current century, or let's just say from anywhere from 10,500 BC to about 2,500 BC. But they didn't do the big work. They were doing sort of like the grunt work. The only people that had anti-gravity flying crafts, which I describe in detail in Time Travelers from Our Future, were the double T's. The time travelers were the ones supervising it. They were the ones who had the anti-gravity crafts. And they kind of like came and go because the ETs had a very short attention span. They would work on it for a while, then leave. The time travelers didn't have a short attention span, but they simply had more pressing things to do. But they were the ones mostly sort of like the big supervisors and providing the anti-gravity flying crafts, which is the only way those blocks of stone could have been moved in a period of time. By the way, the pyramid was built in 4 years.
4 years?
The majority, let's say the majority was built in 4 years. Not 100,000 slaves in 20 years, as you hear about. That's all garbage. It was built in 4 years.
Boy, have I got to introduce you to Dr. Hawass. He'd love your butt, I'll tell you.
Well, I as long as I don't have a brown stain in my miniskirt, I guess we'll be in good shape.
who Dr. Hawass is.
No, I don't, actually.
Zahi Hawass, he is the Director of Antiquities at Giza.
Oh.
And he bristles when anybody suggests that anybody other than Egyptians with mass labor built the pyramid.
Was he the one who was on the Fox special recently?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, now we know you're talking about. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm, yes, okay. I know him personally.
Oh, very good. Well,
he'd love your butt.
Well, I would love to connect with him sometime. We have a lot to discuss over some Egyptian pet coffee or whatever.
Connect is indeed what you would do.
Let me give you an example of law here, of a personal experience I had. The best vacation I ever had in my entire life up until when I moved to the West Coast was 1977. I went to Montego Bay, Jamaica. All right? And it was a lot of fun. I spent about a week there between Christmas and New Year's of 1977. And now it's 8 years later, and I was in Baltimore, Maryland. And I said to myself, you know, it's cold out. I don't like this weather. I was just kind of fantasizing and saying to myself, I would really like to go to Montego Bay. But it was too late to make plans, so I said, why not use my teleportation technique? Other patients of mine have teleported. Why not me?
Yes.
So I went to my living room. Two dogs at the time, Carmen and Phoenix, the originals. I have now the second generation. They were looking at me like I was weird because I was dressing in my bathing suit or my shorts, you know, and I had my copper tone and my, you know, towel, right?
Yes.
Because when you teleport, the physical body goes. It's not an out-of-body experience. It's a real body experience. All of a sudden, the next thing I know, I'm lying on the couch playing my little teleportation tape, and all of a sudden, I'm in Montego Bay. I'm in the middle of the beach, on the sand there in the beach, and all of a sudden, there's this young lady, maybe 25, dark hair, looks like a college student, and she looks at me and she goes, where did you come from? And I, because she can't run on the beach real fast, you know, how do you get there? She looked up, I wasn't there, all of a sudden, I'm there. And I said, well, let's just say it's a long story. So I said, do you mind if I put my towel down? And she goes, yeah, sure. What's that? So we're talking, and I go swimming, and we're just having a good conversation. So I'm there for about 3 or 4 hours. Now she says, by the way, how long are you going to be here? And I said, well, my flight leaves soon. And the next thing she knows, she says, I'm going to listen to the music, and I'm just going to sun myself, and I'll talk to you in a few minutes. So she goes to sun herself. The next thing I know, I'm back on my couch in good old Baltimore, and there are my two dogs with their heads cocked looking at me like, where have you been, Daddy? And you say, okay, this was a fantasy. This was an out-of-body experience, maybe. Fine, right? There's only one little problem with the paradigm.
Yes?
When I walked up to look at the mirror, I had a suntan. No hypnotic technique can give you a suntan.
I'm beginning to get very suspicious of you, Doctor. Speaking of vacations, you've seen the movie Somewhere in Time.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, yes. In October, I am so intrigued, so driven, that Ramona and I are going to the Grand Hotel at Mackinac Island.
Oh.
For the Somewhere in Time reunion.
Bring your coins with you. You know what I mean, right?
Yes, oh, of course. The penny, yes.
Yep. Well, you know, it's interesting. That was a pretty movie. It was a brilliantly written, acted. Reeves did a great job. It was just a pretty, pretty movie. And it was also, of course, obviously the topic is not exactly a turnoff to me anyway, and you too, I'm sure.
Of course.
But, you know, interesting about the concept here, about this, about the teleportation, et cetera. What's very interesting about this is that, you know, here's a woman who came to me from a little small town in Pennsylvania that had a hairdresser who was always off on Monday. This woman lives up in her, like, a little farm area. She has only one vehicle, which is her husband's pickup truck that he takes to work. And she wanted to get her hair done on a Monday. And, of course, the only person who's there in the town where she's stranded because she has no car is closed on Monday. And she decides to use my teleportation technique because I had worked with her. She goes to Chicago, teleports to Chicago, where on a Monday you can get your hair done. Right? Gets her hair done, dematerializes, comes back to her home. Her husband comes home at about 4:30 or so as his way, and he says, "Honey, what is going on here? You don't have any transportation. You know, Mabel, whoever does the hair, is closed. How did you get your hair done?" And she said, "Someday, dear, I'll tell you the story." And that's an example. That's a physical evidence of teleportation. Now, the classic case, by the way, the really classic case which I put in Time Travelers, which is itself, to me, enough documentation. This has been documented for 400-plus years. October 25th, 1593, Spanish soldier appeared at the plaza in front of the palace in Mexico City. He had a Spanish uniform. Mexico City did not have Spanish uniforms. They had Mexican uniforms.
Right.
They had Mexican guns. This guy had a Spanish gun. He said he was from Manila, which is 9,000 miles away.
You bet.
And he said that that the governor of Manila, this one Don Gomez Perez Das Moranis, had been murdered the previous night. Well, the authorities thought he was like what some people think I am, I guess, these days. And they decide to put him in prison, and they decide that this guy's just crazy. 2 months later, a ship comes from the Philippines with the news that the governor had, in fact, been murdered on the exact date claimed by the soldier.
So you're really telling me there's evidence of time travelers everywhere.
Right. He was immediately released and sent back to Manila. Now, the point is this was documented by everyone, including church records. I mean, it goes all the way back. There's no way you can get from Manila to Mexico City 9,000 miles away in 24 hours.
That's right.
By the fastest ship they had around, you know?
Right.
And therefore, here's a documented example of teleportation. Yes, it goes back, even if you read the religious literature, you'll talk about out-of-body experience by locations of priests and popes. It goes all the way back to antiquity. We've always teleported. Teleportation, by the way, is a very complicated technique, I will grant you. It's not something you do with one playing of a tape or one exercise.
I want to ask a question here.
Yeah.
Would time travelers be more evident as time goes on?
Oh, yeah, of course. There's more time travelers here today. I mean, on this planet today, there are hundreds of time travelers in the future, ranging from the 31st to the 50th century. There are no time travelers beyond the 50th century.
Why?
Because there are no humans on the Earth after the 50th century.
Why?
Because I feel we all ascend. That's the whole point of this, is spiritual growth.
We all ascend.
This is the consciousness shift coming on, and that's what's happening as we speak, if you will. And that's a biggie, and that's the purpose of time travelers. They're here to help us because they're us in the future, and they have a vested self-interest in our growth because they're us. By the way, I must correct something I said earlier. I did say that when I was describing Muat, Trax's supervisor, being from the 40th century, I erred. I guess it's the rapidity in which I speak. He's actually from the 36th century, which is the same century as Traxer. A man named Ample, which is A-M-P-L-E, which stands for Pleiadian or Pleiadian, however you pronounce it, ambassador,
yes,
is a man who works with Traxer from the 40th century, and that's how we know Traxer is going to survive the E.T. wars.
You could not possibly have made all this up. You just could not possibly have made all this up.
And remember, I've had my little Atlantean ale with him in hyperspace, so I've had one-on-ones. The most significant time traveler, by the way, is a man named Chatnoy. He's from the 50th century. He's 900 years old. He wears a thick gold collar, and he's got kind of like a simian appearance to him. So in my own little sense of humor, I refer to him as Dr. Zaius.
Yes.
If you're a fan of Planet of the Apes. He calls me, of course, you know, he calls me the BFG, and he's kind of fun about it. Anyway, he's going to ascend very soon, and he's a timeliner, and he's the one who actually helped Tatos, the one who developed time travel in the year approximately 3050. He is actually the one who interfered with his dream levels, because time travelers can do that. Time travelers attracts. There was the one who gave a little thought impression to my artist who did the portrait of him, so he could be in page 25 of Time Travelers Smart Future.
Is the name Truska backwards, Ask Art, simply a coincidence?
No, that was part of his mission, one of his missions. See, understand, I'm not trying to be arrogant or mentality. I'm one of many people who are getting the message out. I mean, Ray Fowler, Linda Moulton Howe, and a lot of your friends and my friends, I'm just one of many. The reason why he wanted to introduce me was because I tend to have a certain expertise, which may reflect of my futuristic origins, possibly, but I tend to have a certain, detailed knowledge of the future that nobody seems to really have. Past Life, Future Life, for example, is the only book that gives the details of the next 1,000 years. If you want to go beyond 1,000 years, Time Travel Smart Future gives you the history, or shall we say, the technology going into the 50th century.
Can you tell us specifically about the next 1,000 years?
All right, next 1,000 years is a biggie here. First of all, we're not going to have to worry a whole lot about things like Armageddon mentalities. What you're going to have now is you're going to have things like cold fusion becomes an energy source, free energy, before the 24th century. We're going to have things like anti-gravity cars within 150 years. We're going to have things like thermal transformers, which regulate the weather. We'll be able to take an information pill, pop a pill, and get the equivalent of a PhD education. Mm. We'll be able to do molecular transporting, like teleportation, except not time travel until the 31st century. We'll be able to have, of course, universal translators of all languages. Telepathy will be installed in a few years, a few hundred years, if you will.
What do you mean installed?
Well, I mean, we'll be able to do it. Anyone will be able to do telepathic
communication. We'll require the ability, yeah.
Right. Well, you're not going to need implants for it. You're going to have what I call, this is fun, this is what I call the mind witch machine. The mind witch machine, which takes several hundred years to develop, is a machine where you can actually think, I want a chicken sandwich, and it materializes in the machine.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, I call it the mind witch machine. The Earl of Mind Witch is a fast food chain in the future, I guess.
You can even get a BLT.
Or whatever you want. Or Jacko can get his Atlantean ale.
All right.
All right. Then there's also some of the problems are mind pirates, where people go around trying to steal thoughts, and not just brainwashing, but actually steal your thoughts. Okay, like the
mind pirates.
Yeah, they're called mind pirates, and they're not cool. They tend to, do the things. Holographic devices, sort of like the holodeck on Star Trek, is developed, of course, by long before 1,000 years from now. Phaser guns, like the Star Trek and the Star Wars, are going to be developed in about over 100 years, if not less than that. Then there's also something called the Psi League, PSI, Psi League, which is a scientific organization that is responsible for telepathy. So that everyone can literally telepathically communicate, which means people won't lie because you can read their minds. So therefore, you can't do the Hollywood schmooze, if you will, and get away with it because people can read your mind, which means you can't lie and get away with it. Test tube babies, so people will actually literally be able to order a baby based on genetic mentality, almost like you're ordering a six-course meal in France. You know, I mean, you can do very, very exotic things. Because the cities will be built under glass in places like the moon, et cetera, so people can obviously breathe the atmosphere, artificial atmosphere, terraforming, if you will, is what's going to be real big.
Glass.
We're going to have things like two large crystal rings will be placed around the bodies prior to death, which cleanses the aura and allows for a more smooth transition into the astral plane, which allows for a quicker end to the karmic cycle. I describe something like this without using the rings in my book, Peaceful Transition, about how you can actually shorten your karmic cycle. But they use technology on the Earth plane anyway to do this by these large crystal rings. Remember, crystal refers always to Atlantis. Atlantis was big on crystal as a source of energy.
Uh-huh.
Basically, would you like to know what's going to happen next 25 years?
Yes, I would.
Next 25 years, your PCs will be a million times more powerful. We will have something called mechanotronics, mechanical and electrical engineering techniques to replace just about every internal body part. In fact, there will be a device developed so that we'll be able to, a person who's about to die, will be able to have an audio-visual image of the last memory of his awareness. Therefore, murders will be almost non-existent.
So, in other words, in the future commercials, when they say Intel Inside, they're really serious.
They're really serious. But here's the thing: the reason why murders are going to be so rare is because when somebody kills somebody,
yes,
the person who died would have an audiovisual tape, which is admissible in court, which can get the murderer. You see, so people don't murder is not real cool. It's like a 7-Eleven camera during the robbery here. Genetic engineering of organisms to produce medicines, food processing, and waste disposal. Genetic screening and programs to enhance us, both physically, emotionally, and even mentally.
Boy.
We're going to have global electronic currency. Most crimes will be computer crimes, interestingly enough. And this is just 25 years from now.
We're already getting there now. I can see the trend.
And we're going to have what I call Amazon.com-like companies, purely electronic, paperless companies is real, going to be real big.
Sure.
Subliminal learning will be big, solar energy for residential and industrial use.
So in other words, all the people investing now in these internet companies are not really going wrong.
No, as a matter of fact, well, look what happened to Amazon.com. You know, a couple of years ago, my publisher said that they're probably going to go bankrupt, and all of a sudden now they're the hottest item you can get here.
Absolutely.
You're going to have also 3D television. Without glasses. It's going to be a holographic television for used in video conferences as well as watching your favorite show when Art Bell is a guest on one of these Millennium shows or whatever.
Great.
You're going to have computer links to biological sense organs, so medicine's going to make a lot of advances. Ships will be able to travel and dock automatically. Computers will write their own software programs and design other computers. Okay?
Yes.
And electronic voting and referendums are going to be real big, of course, like the town meetings. Manned mission to Mars before 2025. Moon base, of course, a village, if you will, not Hillary Clinton's village, but a real village, will be there. And we're talking about some pretty nice heavy-duty stuff coming up here. That's we'll have special little card devices that will store complete medical and financial records, like a little credit card, so people can instantly, if you're hurt, a physician can pull this thing up, put you in a computer, and find out exactly what's going on.
All right, doctor, listen. Take a good, deep, long breath.
All right.
We're going to do a newscast and a couple of other things. We'll be right back. Oh, what a kick. Dr. Bruce Goldberg is my guest, and you just got a capsule version of the next 1,000 years. Listen, we are going to open up the phones for Dr. Goldberg when we get back. Questions are bound to slow him up a little, maybe. We'll be right back. Goldberg, welcome back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be back with you, Draco. I mean, Art.
Right. You know, as I said on the air a moment ago, there's no way that you could make this up and not screw yourself up talking about it at the speed you're talking about it. There's no way. The question is, Art, ask Dr. Goldberg, if he is a time traveler or knows time travelers, whatever he cares to admit, would you please ask him then when official public knowledge of extraterrestrials will be made?
Well, actually, I pointed out in Past Lives, Future Lives that the official recognition is not going to be till the 25th century.
The 25th century,
right,
huh?
You're going to have to wait about 400 years.
Huh. Then there's one other thing. With the dimensional aspects of what you've told us this whole thing is made up of, it would require... Or maybe it wouldn't. I just want to get my head wrapped around this concept.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an Art Bell here, and an Art Bell there, and an Art Bell there, and maybe a dead Art Bell there, there would almost have to be a shared soul.
No, actually, it's quite different. As a matter of fact, recent scientific knowledge, I'll give you some research that's, that even a non-time traveler would know about.
Right.
Basically, there is something called dark matter or shadow matter. Are you familiar with that?
Dark matter, yes.
Okay, well, dark matter is unionized matter. If it's unionized, no electric charge, you can't see it. And it makes up 90 to 99% of the universe, according to astrophysicists today.
Yes.
That's a biggie. By the way, the dark matter, because we can't see it, and it makes up almost the entire universe, it's like the conservative estimate is 90%, it's unionized. It could explain things like the way time travelers move through physical objects. It could explain teleportation, like in the Philadelphia experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It's very likely the makeup of the soul. And it's actually the fifth dimension, this dark matter. Right? It could be how a time traveler or spirit guide can move through solid matter. It can explain reincarnation, near-death experiences, all kinds of out-of-body experiences. It's a mechanism for angels. It's ascension. It's God. It's how mystics receive their data.
One,
it's soul healing. It's curing cancer. It's esoteric surgery. Everything.
One soul per dimension.
Well, you see, I have to understand something. The soul actually splits. It's like energy. If you take a light beam and put a block of wood in front of it, it splits into different photon ranges.
Right.
They're all from the same source, but they're also having different paths. You see?
All right.
Think of the soul that way. It's electromagnetic radiation.
All right. Here comes some people. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Jean in Las Vegas.
Hello, Jean.
Hi, Jean.
Hi there.
I hope you haven't bet the farm on the local gambling casinos, but what's up, Jean?
Oh, okay. No, that's why I'm not why I'm calling. I had a very strange dream or experience about 1976, and I wondered if I had experienced teleportation.
Go ahead, tell me about it.
Okay, I, of course, went to bed and went to sleep, and I wake up, and I find myself standing at the L.A. County Art Museum looking at a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gee, I've never seen this before. This is really neat, and I'm reading the artist's name.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I realized I'm very cold. And it's like this kind of cool breeze is blowing, and I realize I'm standing on a very cold floor. Well, I look around, and the museum is closed. It's at night, and it's very dark, and there's only a light here and,
wow,
and there. And I hear the guards shuffling around, you know, here and there also, but I don't see anybody. And all of a sudden, I'm just terrified, and I think, oh, my gosh, what if they find me?
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to explain being here? How did I get here? I'll either be arrested or put in the booby hatch.
Yeah.
And then a worse fear came. I thought, I don't know how I got here. How am I going to get home?
Right.
And I'm thinking, I've got two sons at home.
Mm-hmm.
What if I can't get back in, you know, the same time frame? So finally, I wake up, and I'm standing in my bed, and there's this little pinwheel just above my head that was there for just a moment, and then it vanished. And I was just wondering what that was.
All right, let me ask you a very critical question.
Uh-huh.
At any time during this experience, did you hear a popping sound emanating from the top of your head?
Well, I had heard, I had had this kind of experience before where there was the sound like hot pudding bubbling. It starts at the base of the spine and goes all the way up.
You've just given me the data here.
Oh.
Very simply, by the way, when you do an out-of-body experience, and many of you, and Art may not relate to it because he was shotgunned into the upper astral plane and didn't know what dimension he was on. With all due respect, Art, but as an expert of 3,000 or so out-of-body experiences, you don't feel cold out of the body. Okay, you just don't do that. You do feel cold, by the way, if you're standing on cold floor, if you're teleporting your physical body. But let me show you why what you did, I believe, Gene, was a teleportation. Let me give you a classic example here.
Okay.
When you teleport, what happens is that you will often hear a popping sound emanating from the top of the head. You will feel, for example, nothing else in the environment will be altered, but nobody may have observed you dematerialize, but you will experience an increase in your vibrating energy at high speeds, accompanied by tingling, buzzing sensations, and a feeling of spiraling upwards, all right? When that happens, you arrive where you are, and when you come back, it's the reverse process, and when you relocate to where you originally are, the popping sound can come again, and your body will be traveling at the speed of light, but this popping of this pudding sound sounds like the popping sound. You don't normally hear these popping sounds with out-of-body experiences. You can hear the roar of the sea, which is characteristic of the astral plane, but the pop is not a breakfast cereal. It's a very characteristic of teleportation.
So in other words, you're saying she really physically went from A to B.
Gene, you don't have cold feet now, I hope. What you're describing, I can't, you know, you can't certify this absolutely, but I would say it's about 90%, which is the percentage minimum of dark matter in the universe, that was a teleportation.
Oh, my gosh.
Congratulations. In other words, you were really there. That's cool.
Oh, my heavens.
Hey, next time you're in L.A., come to Woodland Hills, and we'll have coffee.
Oh, great. Sounds wonderful.
All right.
Thank you so much.
There you are. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Yeah, this is Larry in Louisiana.
Hello, Larry.
Yeah, I'm hard to get you, Art. I have to hear you all the way out of Little Rock. I'm in the middle of the state.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, my question for the doctor is, I got this knowledge, and I don't know how it works exactly, but somebody told me one time, if you took a nickel or any item, and you took it 100 years into the future,
yeah,
and now you brought it back to present time, it would not begin to age until it reached that point in time at which you took it in the future.
Oh, that's a very good point, actually.
There's your exotic materials.
Yes, you are changing, because you have to understand, you're taking this matter, this metal, if you will, and going through breaks in the space-time continuum, tears in the fabric of time, which does alter the molecular construction of it, and that's why frogs fall from the sky, because of these breaches in the space-time continuum. So you're talking about a paradigm that is not out of the water here?
Yes. Yeah, actually, I was, I guess, teleported and given this information by someone else.
Listen, if you really want to do this more controlled, like I say, you, and of course, this is for the listeners too, hook onto the website, click onto mine, or my www.dr, then spell my name out, .com, or call my 1-800-527-6000. six,
yeah, I got
and
it.
4-8, and get the fifth dimensional exercise. This will allow you not just to have out-of-body experiences and teleportation mentalities, but it will allow you to control and direct it.
All right, you're saying this man is onto something then.
Yeah. This
okay.
Man is, It doesn't work. It works going forward in time and not aging. Going back in time is one thing. But if it originates from the future and you send it back in time, that doesn't mean it won't age normally, because that's how time travelers actually planted some of the, like when you interviewed Michael Cromo about the limonite crystals
from
2.8 billion years ago.
Right.
Those were actually shot back in time from the future to do that, and then those little equator marks were made in the future and then sent back in time. Because, see, the way time travel was developed was first you had holograms like an image, like when you read about the Greek oracles and the ancient Roman oracles. They had these little visions like you saw in the original Star Wars movie with Princess Leia in the bottle,
Right.
Those were the first experiences of time travel. Then there was sending objects back, like the limonite crystals or iron ore and other objects. And then, of course, human beings were sent back. The first one was a man named Tatos, who was the originator and developer of it in the year about 3050. And he was the one who began the time traveler teams and everything else. And by the way, Tatos and his group was on the continent of Lemuria, which rises in the Pacific Ocean, and it's called Muvia, M-U-V-I-A.
Yeah, actually, it's on Gordon Michael Scallion's map, by the way.
Oh, well, okay, very
Lemuria.
Good. And Muvia is where Muvia is like the Houston training ground. It's like the Johnson Space Center, and that's where time travels all the way from the 31st century to the 50th century. They all train there.
Boy. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, fine. Where are you?
Tony from Oklahoma City.
Yes, sir.
I got a weird story here. I don't know what it was.
Good.
This was about 30 years ago. I worked in a department store, and in the stockroom, I unloaded trucks and then checked off all the material and all that stuff.
Right.
And I walked out with this truck driver out the door into the store, and told him where to go to get paid, and he would have to walk down this aisle. And about halfway down the aisle, there was a customer service area where he would have to go to get paid.
Right.
And beyond that, at the end of the aisle, there was a full-length mirror. And I watched him as he walked towards the customer service area. And I could see both him and the reflection in the mirror.
Sure.
At the same time.
Right.
I could see him walking. But in the mirror, he was running.
Oh, wow. Well, the mirror is very critical because the mirror is considered to be a doorway into other dimensions. It's used by the ancients for their out-of-body experiences and all their techniques and some of the magic rituals. Mirrors are really weird because of the way they distort the reality that we look upon. When you're doing things like out-of-body experiences and when you're throwing in things like dark matter and all the things that we talk about. So what you were doing is you were actually using your own astral eyes via this mirror, which stimulated it, and you saw him in a parallel universe running. That's what went on there.
Well, that's incredible.
Oh, my God.
It has happened. I know it's weird to you, but this is not a difficult thing to explain.
Oh, that's really, really, really interesting. All right, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hello.
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 Hi, my name is David. I'm calling from Hawaii.
Hi, David.
Yeah, my question for Dr. Goldberg is, it's a really interesting topic here. They're talking about time travel.
Yes, it is.
And stuff
yes.
Like that. What I wanted to know is, say, for instance, if I were to go back into time or somebody else.
Yes.
And to change anything, like somebody did something bad and they wanted to go back and change.
And correct it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would the other people be affected by that change?
It's just a paradox question. If you went back in time and tried to prevent, who the hell knows, the collapse of a bridge in an earthquake in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
And you did that, what possible effects could that have, or is it incalculable? Could you not calculate it?
Well, you couldn't calculate it now, but it would definitely have an effect. Again, it's only on one parallel universe. When you come back into after you have this little experience, you may be in the original universe you started in, whereas your effect may have been in a parallel, and most likely would be in a parallel universe. Therefore, you would not see the fruit of your efforts, you see? Because you can't, it's very difficult to stay in the same parallel universe that you do some time traveling in. The people who can do it well are the Traxxas. In 1600 years, they developed those fifth-dimensional computer chips, and it's like a pre-programmed airplane, you know, the computers that steer most of our aircraft today. They're rather accurate.
But Doctor, if there was a time traveler here today that was visible at the right vibrational rate, and we could physically see this time traveler, would we know what we were seeing? Would we know this person was not of our time?
No. You wouldn't recognize him. I mean, you might see a guy with blonde hair, blue eyes, and, you know, 6'7", 6.5 feet tall, but you wouldn't know he was a time traveler under no circumstances, unless maybe he took his fingerprints and didn't find any references. You would not, they look the same as anyone else. By the way, time travelers, when I give you the MO, let me tell you something. Time travelers can change their appearance. They have the method of using the, what we call intergalactic lines.
Morphing.
Shape-shifting is what people would call
shape-shifting.
It.
Shape-shifting.
Very complicated procedure. I describe this in very detail in time travelers from our future. And they can look taller, shorter, et cetera. So the fact that I am not 6.5 feet tall and blonde hair does not necessarily nullify the paradigm of me being possibly a time traveler.
I understand. Another question. If a time traveler was here from, say, the 30th century and died here, what would happen?
Well, they bury him. I mean, he would die here, but remember, on only one parallel universe is he dead, if you will. On the other parallel universes in the future, he would survive. Traxxa is a good example. Traxxa was 0-2. He came back twice to first Lemuria, then Atlantis,
but,
and was
with
killed.
But without conscious recollection of... Or awareness of the fact that you continue in another universe, what does it mean?
Well, it only means on the universe in which he dies, he then goes into the astral plane and goes through the reincarnational cycle as Traxxa did when he came back as Learat and then, of course, Traxxa. On the other universes where he is alive, he doesn't know any difference. Just like right now, are you aware of all your parallel selves going on right now?
No, sir.
If you were, you'd be psychotic. I mean, that's my definition of psychotic behavior, are people who are trapped between parallel universes.
So in other words, a lot of people who actually may be in mental institutions ought not be there?
Well, I'm not saying they're obviously not competent to deal with life. I mean, some of them are suicidal and some of them are homicidal. So obviously you've got to put strains on them in some way. But what I'm saying is that the reason why they're mentally ill, what we call mentally ill, isn't because of some serotonin deficit or because of some other mentality. It's because of a dimensional mentality, a parallel universe, dark matter, fifth dimensional mentality, which psychiatry is not exactly attuned to these days.
Gotcha. Very quickly, first time caller line on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, it's me. Okay, this is Mary. I'm calling from a little town down the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And it's such a pleasure to talk with you, Art, and your guest.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for so many years. Something really strange happened to my whole family several years ago. It was about in the late 60s. My husband and I and the children were getting ready on a Sunday morning to go to church. And we were just walking out the door to get in the car, and we live in a rural community, and you know just about everyone that lives in the area.
Sure.
And there was a man just suddenly appeared on, it's like a little lane that we lived on.
You mean you saw him actually materialize?
No, we didn't see him materialize.
Boom, he was just there.
Pardon?
Boom, he was just there.
No, not that. It was just that as we were walking out to the car, and it's just a little small area, we didn't see the man coming in any direction, and we could have seen him.
Right.
But we just noticed him all of a sudden. We didn't see him appear or anything.
Did you think from the logistics, the geographic of location where you were, that it was physically impossible for him to arrive in such a short period of time right in front of you?
Well, I think so. It was like a little lane that several hundred yards off of the highway.
Ma'am, hold on. We're at a break point, so you're going to have to hold through the break. Can you
okay.
do? All right, good. Hold on. Dr. Brew was on the line. Ma'am, go ahead.
Sure.
Yes. Dr. Goldberg had asked me, kind of paint a picture for him as to where we saw this gentleman. It was, there's a highway and then a little driveway leading from the highway several hundred yards and to our house. We could see the highway from where we lived, and then we could also see the direction that our highway and little lane took back to the highway.
Okay.
With only two houses on one side of the lane and an open field on the other side of the lane. Everything was in view. So as we were getting ready to leave, we just didn't see the man materialize or anything, but he just seemed to walk from just along the little road towards our car that was parked in front of the house. and we were just amazed. He was a very regal-looking man. We'd never seen anyone like him before.
Would I be correct in assuming, ma'am, that from your perspective, I know you're describing it, and this is, it means more to you because you're there and you know uh-huh. the topography. Am I correct in assuming, then, that logically from where he came from the moment that you saw him uh-huh. versus the moment that you didn't, it didn't seem logical that he could have possibly somehow gotten there without you noticing
him? That's right. That's
okay.
right.
This is what I acutely refer to as the virus in the fifth dimension. What happened most likely here, to me, everything you tell me is accurate, and right now you sound like a person not only with Southern hospitality, but you sound like you got your wits with you. I would suspect he went through a breach in the fabric of space-time. This is why I call it a virus in the fifth dimension. This is how extraterrestrial crafts will disappear, going 900 miles an hour, and all of a sudden the Air Force reports them off the radar screens
right.
or whatever they got. This is what's called going into that little parallel dimension, if you will, where in a parallel universe, you can't see a person in the parallel universe based on where we are now. So what he did was he went through one of these doorways, as we call it, call it a wormhole, if you will, call it anything you want, and that's why he appeared, and he would eventually disappear. The fact that he was regal-looking, et cetera, he didn't belong there in a small town. Everybody knows everybody, you know.
Out of place, sure.
And you pretty much know who's a stranger in town, and this guy obviously was not well-known to everybody else would have reported, hey, guess who came into town wearing a ascot or whatever.
I mean, you're dead right. In this modern day and age, this could be going on a lot, and we wouldn't even notice. I mean, for example, in New York City. You ever been in New York on a busy day?
Sure.
People could come and go and blink in and out, and nobody would know the damn difference.
Listen, in New York City at Manhattan at 12 o'clock noon, I don't have to walk. People just push me from one block to the other.
Yeah, I know. Here's a question by fax. What is the actual purpose or reason for these time travelers? And on their plane in the future, do they have a civilization that has a social world and world issues like we do? I mean, here we are. We're bombing Yugoslavia right now. We have social issues. We debate abortion. We do all of this. What's it like 1,000 years from now?
All right. First of all, they're here for our spiritual growth because many of them are our descendants. So therefore, the more we grow, the more they grow. They want this whole planet, like the Buddha syndrome, to ascend. That's their goal. So they're trying to help us out technologically. We have free will. We can reject their help, and that's why we make bombs instead of using the powers like nuclear mentality for more positive uses on a more regular basis. As far as their society, it's futuristic. The population is much lower because they don't tend to have the reproduction urge that we have. They don't have poverty. They don't have diseases as we know it, per se. They live to be 900 years, so you figure it out. They're rather well together. But their homes, if you will, are not like I live in Los Angeles where, you know, people keep up with the Joneses is sort of like injected into you when you walk in here. They don't do that. Their homes are simple. They're very conservative in design. They don't have a lot of furniture, a lot of fancy things. They live a fairly simple life, but they are very, very spiritual, very intellectual. They speak fast. They do radio interviews. They like warm weather.
You're
going to
torture me with this all the way through the program.
Time travelers like warm weather. I live in Los Angeles. Okay. But let me just make one comment here, too, for your listeners, too. I get a lot of calls from your Seattle people. You're very big in Seattle up there. And I'm going to be in Seattle on August 4th doing an interview on their Channel 4, the Northwest Afternoon Show, where I'll be doing a live cast life regression and a live future life progression. And then later that evening on August 4th, I'll be doing a Discover You class where I'll be taking groups of people, everybody who comes there, into past and future lives. So you can do your own time traveler if you're in Seattle and just hook up with my website and all the information's on there. And it'll be a lot of fun. And there'll be I'm actually going to take the entire studio audience and doing some time travel there, too. So if you want to go to the station, KOMO, you can have some free time traveling.
That's my affiliate.
Don't
take them away entirely. I need them. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Just want to say thanks for a great show.
You bet.
I was yawning.
If you yawned and made any noise at all, you'd lose about 5 minutes of normal content. So, anyway, where are you?
I'm from Minnesota, but I'm going into Chicago.
Okay.
Hi. I heard Dr. Goldberg mentioning the next 25 years. I wanted to know if he knew anything about Earth changes that are supposed to be in our near future.
Very good question. Earth changes, everybody wants to know, a doctor.
Okay, well, this is going to disappoint some people. The Earth changes, there are going to be Earth changes, but with all due respect to some of your previous guests, The maps are inaccurate. There will be no sinking of continents. There will be no California drowning, Florida drowning, the United States divided into three sections.
No Atlantis rising, Lemuria.
That ain't going to happen. Okay? You're not going to have the geographical disturbances that are beyond the usual range of the weather problems that we always have. In the last couple of thousand years, no major continent has gone down, has it? So the weather problems are not going to be anything out of the ordinary. The weather may get warmer and this and that. As far as the geophysical, you're not going to have the real major calamities that people are worried about. And by the way, Y2K is not the problem. It's not going to be a problem. And you can see what's going to happen in about 7 months or so. You will not see a major issue with Y2K. People have to buy computers, maybe, but it's not going to be the power failures. So the future of the next 25 years on the level of fulfillment, of happiness, of technology, and of just lifestyle because of geophysical disturbances is quite bright. And economically, it's unbelievably bright.
Well, that's good to hear. That's really good to hear, especially economically. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg.
Hi.
Hello. Speak up good and loud. Where are you?
Sorry. I'm Andy. I'm from Indianapolis.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I had a couple areas I wanted to look at.
All right.
And I think they've been answered before. Mental illnesses as an alternate universe person?
Mm-hmm.
Between two universes?
Right. Stuck between parallel universes, right.
What I've tried to explain to some of the people who have dealt with my case is that I'm in an area where I know where I'm at, but it feels different. It feels like I'm not supposed to be there.
Do you think, are people classifying you as mentally ill? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but I function normally enough to be able to do most things in life.
All right. But let me ask you this. Forget about the diagnosis or whatever they're calling it. Let's just deal with one factor for a moment. Do you yourself get information from different perspectives at the same time and place?
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that.
Okay, what I mean by that is I'm trying to see whether you're actually getting information from parallel universes.
Well,
it's almost like two messages at the same time when somebody speaks to you, if you can think of that way.
Not exactly. It's more of a feeling.
All right, well, tell me about the feeling, because feelings can be the same thing. You can get feelings from parallel universes, too.
It feels more like I'm not in the right place.
Okay.
And yet I know the area.
Hmm. All right. You feel out of place where you are? I want you to listen very carefully. This is what I call paragression. I want to tell you a case I did very recently. A man leaves his body. I was training him out of body experiences. He leaves the body. He wants to do some astral voyaging, as I call it. And he goes and he finds himself. He lives at home with his mother, and he has a job. You know, he's a young kid, if you will. And he recognizes his mother, but all of a sudden he doesn't like what's going on, and she's acting a little bit differently, but she looks the same. He goes to work, and again everything seems out of place. So he figures, what is going on? Then he remembers my work, and of course he read time travel, so he knew about the parallel universes. He says, I must be in a parallel universe because I think everybody recognizes me, but I think they're a little weird. All right? He comes back into his body, right, which is no problem, right? Now he goes to work the following day. He doesn't see his mother because late at night. He goes to work the following day very early. His boss says, come into my office, please. We got a problem. So he says, what's going on? He says, what the heck happened to you yesterday? He says, what do you mean? He says, you are not yourself. His mother said he was not himself. They changed places for a few hours, actually for a day. You get it? They change places. So in each parallel universe, somebody, some doctor, some psychiatrist or whatever analyzing them would have probably called them schizophrenic. In reality, all they did was play swappies for a day.
I got you.
You see? No. That's called a paragression. You may be experiencing that without all the details because it's not so easy to lay it out step by step, but I think that you're experiencing a little bit of a parallel universe mentality, which of course would be interpreted by the medical community in their God syndrome as mental disorder.
Their God syndrome, huh? Well, for the Rockies, you're on there with Dr. Goldberg. Hello.
Hi, yeah, my name is Josh, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Art. I listen to you, and Doctor, I'm really enjoying all this. The last thing you just said, I have conflict with that because of ego stuff, but I don't even want to go there. Actually, my conflict is with what you just said to that last gentleman is you told him that he could possibly be one kind of ego in one universe and another kind of ego in the other universe or dimension, whatever the word is, And there's conflict with that because...
It's not ego. It's soul. Ego is the defense mechanism which don't travel. It's the soul or subconscious mind or the dark matter or shadow matter that's traveling. And by the way, theoretical models are supported by Fred Alan Wolf, Stephen Hawking, Cambridge University, et cetera. So these models, the mathematical models have been there for years. We know that.
I have four questions. That is like one question. And also, if you could repeat your 1-800 number later.
We'll get to that.
Okay, yes, sir. My question is, would these rips in time and space explain, one, deja vu, two, what evidence of our known civilization could be proved that a lot of the stuff that is here in the now is all mostly sent back from the future, i.e., B.C., before Christ, and after Christ, how we measure things in the story of the Bible, and... Can most of that consciousness have been sent back, like from another time and space, an alternate reality? And the third question to that, deja vu, i.e. consciousness, and third question is, how come huge geographic sites like Mount Shasta and or, you know, Sedona, Arizona, whatever, New Jersey, how come these states or lakes or wherever we are don't all, if there are rips in time and space, how come gravity helps keep them there and not... You know, highways floating into rivers and...
Well, there's a lot of questions.
Okay, let me ask you. First of all, the deja vu is explained by progression, not a rift in space-time continuum. When I do simple age progressions and people can explain why they feel very familiar, it's not because they were there in the past, it's because they're actually seeing their own future and then living it, and then you feel really weird, and that's what people call deja vu. The second question in reference to the concept here of the limonite iron ore that Art interviewed Michael Cremo, who was one of the co-authors of Forbidden Archaeology, shows without documentation that these spheres do not occur as perfectly rounded spheres with three equator circles or lines on them, and they're 2.8 billion years old. And they weren't 2.8 billion years ago. The largest, the most exotic organism on this planet were slime and lawyers. I mean, you know, there was no humans around to make those marks, you know? So that's the other thing. And the third thing in reference to the concept here about, you mentioned about the biblical stuff and this and that, the reason why rivers don't run into each other is like if you took your body and you took a little razor blade and just put a couple of slit marks, small cuts, that's what a fabric rip in space-time is. We're not talking about a whole continent in rift. It may be a few feet long or it may be a few hundred feet long.
But theoretically...
The planet is 25,000 miles in radius.
Theoretically, something could happen, you know, in a wild sense that, like... You know, a lake could be up higher and into the side of a mountain if some bizarre rip in space.
Yeah, I see what he's saying.
Yeah, he's saying like Humpty Dumpty doesn't go back together again is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But the point is, it doesn't happen that way. I mean, why aren't we living in caves now rather than having websites and satellites and man crafts to whatever? It just doesn't happen that way. The universe is constructed so that we actually can survive and actually can do this because when you think of it, isn't it amazing that we actually live at all? Why does this planet have gravity? Why is there magnetism on this planet? Why aren't we like Venus, or why is there life here at all? I mean, those questions are more theological and anthropomorphic than they are really what we would call astrophysical, if you will, here.
All right, Doctor. His final request was, please, slow down. All right. Now, give out your number and your address and email and all that.
Okay. So
slowly.
1-800-KARMA, for the number 4, the letter U. Engagements, the books, tapes, the et cetera, all the things on there. By the way, one thing I want to talk about too is that just a quick thing. Art has had confirmation. I sent emails. Traxler has been confirmed. So have two other time travelers. So has Muat and Chatnoy. He also had a confirmation that I sent him over of the etheric plane. We talked last time about how you can go to the etheric plane and do surgery, which is an out-of-body experience, on your own physical body, and how I did that myself. Last year. That has been confirmed. And a woman, interestingly enough, read New Age Hypnosis and used my little script for taking a friend of hers into her past life, and she sent a nice little email, which I sent over to Art, where she actually was able to use these techniques. The reason I mention it is because anyone can do it. It's so simple. It's so natural. It's like breathing. It's like turning on Art Bell at night. It's what to do.
All right. First time caller line, your turn with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
This is Nate in California.
Okay.
And it's a pleasure to talk to you, Art, and Dr. Goldberg.
Hey, Nate, it's reciprocal. What's up?
I have a question. Have you ever heard of point of center disruption?
No, I don't know what you mean by that. That term doesn't ring a bell.
It's basically what you're talking about. It focuses a large amount of energy in a small area to produce a small tear in which objects can be sent into a different dimension.
Okay, well, again, people use different terms. It's one of those tomatoes. A psychiatrist would call it disassociation. We would simply call it either teleportation or some sort of alpha state, if you will, altered state of consciousness is the old term, ASCs. So basically, it's just a matter of names. Is there a question you have in reference to other than just a semantic thing here?
Oh, yeah. Listening to Art Bell for a while, he has, on occasion, had the crystal skulls.
Yes.
Have any of your time travelers said if they were sent back from the future to tell us any knowledge about them that are going to be coming?
All right, well, crystal skulls, they are interesting. We've talked about
them.
We can't date those things,
unfortunately, so we can't carbon date them like you can metal and other things, so it's hard to determine where they're from. They won't do that. A time traveler would not just sit there and just give you the information like briefing you at the Pentagon. The time travelers go into your dream levels. They'll stimulate you to figure it out yourself. It's like a Columbo episode here. They're really not just going to lay it on. That's why, you know, I mean, one of the reasons why, I guess, one of the strongest points that people think I am a time traveler, I may or may not be, is because I do give a lot of information, but you'll notice most of the things I do, especially if you follow my career, is to help people to figure it out themselves, to roll
their own. Are there any rules associated with time travel that cannot be spoken of?
Well, yes, of course. They won't give us the technology. Why don't they just publish a book on how to do teleportation and go back in time? I mean, you know, this is not an episode of Third Rock from the Sun here.
Like giving somebody an 1800 TV.
Well, right. They won't blow the scientific technology. They could do that anytime they want to. It's almost like a prime directive in Star Trek here, to a degree. They will stimulate us. I mean, why don't they just give us weapons and say, okay, we're going to give you a weapon that no possible country in the world would even fantasize about doing anything to you. They won't do that. They won't disturb the balance of power, if you will. What they will do is stimulate us, because remember, they're us in the future, so it's sort of like they don't want us to cheat. You see, they won't let you to cheat. They will do, for example, let me show you how time travel in the universe won't let you cheat.
All right, we're going to have to hold that one until after the top of the hour. We're going to break here. Again, you get an opportunity to take a good, deep, long, needed breath. And we'll talk about cheating in time when we get back. From the high desert, time travel. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Give you two confirmations here in reference to people think that, you know, how come my work is so unique? How come nobody else seems to get these things? Well, right. Mutual UFO Journal, November 1980, reported that on July 4th, 1980, in Italy, the military personnel from the Navy Air Base at Cantanio saw two, and I quote, two golden-haired, white-robed beings accompanied by three or four shorter beings. MJ-12 reports, quote, Jesus Christ types who wear belted robes. And Ray Fowler, in his Watches 2 book, reports that Betty Andreasen reported grays who work for tall, robed elders with blue eyes. She called them, or they would be called, the Nordics by the typical UFO ET classification.
That's right.
In reality, those sound like double T's to me. And let's not forget Linda Moulton Howe's report on July 26th, when I was on the show last, just coincidentally, synchronistically, she reported a 6-acre crop circle in Holland, and this farmer named Robert saw the 7-foot white-robed being communicating by telepathy, bathed in white light, who he thought was an angel, and in reality, and teaching spiritual growth. I had a confirmation from Chatnoy from the 50th century. It's one of Chatnoy's colleagues.
Listen, I've got a fax here, and somebody wants to know about the nature of Men in Black.
Right.
And what their real mission is, what they actually do. Can you clarify it?
Men in Black are people, they're simply military types from the future. There's four types of Men in Black. There is the classic one you read about that makes fun of the field, the ET ones, the ones who can't use a ballpoint pen, but they can go to the planet Zuma. You know, they don't do real well. They look odd, and they look like they have plastic bodies and things like that. Then there are the what's called the Black Brotherhood. And please, this is not a racial, ethnic thing. This is a classification that goes back to the Middle Ages and before, antiquity, actually, in which it's black magic practitioners, lower astral entities, real nasty you know, it's pretty much the ones that want to prevent any kind of ET dissemination of information and also encourage disinformation and do the usual Pentagon mentality. And then there are the futuristic Men in Black, who are sort of like cops from the future, if you will, although they're really more military types. Chrononauts is a term I use for them. Travelers are chrononaut. And they simply do not want us to have that kind of... Now, they don't want a time traveler to say, I'm going on NBC, and we're going to have Dateline time traveler. They would kill the time traveler who did that. So the time travelers have to function in this current dimension, in this current time period, in hyperspace, mostly using people, if you will, by their dream levels and by hyperspace, meeting them in hyperspace and trying to do indirect, because a Man in Black cannot trace a time traveler unless they're on the Earth or physical plane. They can't trace you in hyperspace, and they can't trace a time traveler, perhaps me too, in the fifth dimension, in astral plane, causal mental etheric. They can't do it. They have to turn in their Captain Midnight decoder rings when that happens. They can't touch you unless you're on the physical plane in their time span.
All right. I appreciate that. First time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Yeah, hi. This is Jeff in Los Angeles.
Yes, Jeff.
And I have a question for Dr. Goldberg.
Hi, brother.
Hi. There's a problem I've been plagued with my whole life. I've never felt like I've had enough time. A day to me feels like it has maybe 18 hours, and I just have to scramble to get a normal amount of things done.
Uh-huh.
The issue even shows up in my astrological chart, but no one's been ever able to explain it. I've talked to a couple of good psychics, and they've said, well, maybe you're not quite grounded enough or something, but they don't really seem to be able to clue in.
Well,
people seem to relate to this problem.
See, obviously, you're two different beings, because Dr. Goldberg gets 30 hours into 24, whereas you only get 18 into 24.
That's because I may emanate from the 35th century. But anyway, in reference to now, it's a question of what they're talking about. When they say grounded, they want to make sure, first of all, are you disorganized? Do you just simply kind of goof around and whatever before you do things, and therefore things get delayed? That's one level. But I think you're talking about something else. I think you're saying that time, in other words, you may be kind of like misplaced in time to a degree, where the time, space-time continuum dot on the graph that you are right now is not so easy for you to handle, even though you have the ability and the wherewithal to do your activities and errands and whatever. Are you saying then that it's simply like time just simply like slips through you like sand through your hands?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's, again, assuming you're not disorganized and doing the things that I mentioned, if that's not the case, then now we're talking about possibly doing some missing time episodes of time travel, which can do that. You see?
I'm not sure. I understand.
If you're doing time traveling with... actually leave the body and even teleport and not realize. And most teleportation people will not remember, interestingly enough. It'll be a missing time. Like I mentioned that case, Ava, who went from 1966 to 1996 and lost an hour of her life. She had no idea what happened. She blacked out.
Well, I've been told repeatedly I'm doing a lot on the spiritual planes. I'm very busy, very productive, but I sure am not on the physical.
Well, maybe what happens is that, let's say you're on the etheric plane, which is a really cool plane to go to, you're on the earth plane compared to the physical, to the etheric plane is like South Central Los Angeles to Bel Air, okay?
Mm.
There's a big difference here. So if you want to learn more about it, check my website. I'm going to be doing several talks coming up in Burbank, Thousand Oaks for the MUFON people and Artville Chat Club in Montclair in July. I'll be spending a lot of time, and there'll be a lot of time for Q&A, and I'll be able to go into much greater detail than I can during a radio thing where you have only limited time to answer a question.
So you're saying I should ask you in person?
Yeah, come to the... When you're there in person, and I'm there in person, I have a lot more time to deal with things. I usually have, like, you know, you have to answer a question reasonably quickly on the air, and you can't go into so much detail necessarily. Plus, a lot of your history I'd like to know that I can't do on the air because of time constraints, whereas in person, come there in person, and, you'll be able to spend... you'll be able to get a lot more out of it than what I can do on an air interview.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
You got it. Since you're right there, what the heck? Wild card line, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Hi. My question, my name's 321.
321?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. My question is, I seem to have, like, three different levels of thought going on at the same time. Now, I'm not hearing, like, voices from somewhere else. It's like it's three different levels of thought within my own head. And it makes it hard for me to concentrate on certain things. I've been diagnosed with attention deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, is that why you call yourself 321? Because of the three different thoughts you're getting at one time?
No, that has a different significance.
All right. What you possibly are doing, and that's where I need to get a more detailed history, but you may be receiving information from parallel universes. Are you like in a daze state? Do people have to snap their fingers to get your attention a lot?
Many times, yeah.
Are you zoning out, you know what I mean, where you're like daydreaming and you're not really quite... Where you don't know, you're not endangered, but people say, excuse me, you know, I'm over here. They have to get your attention.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an alpha state. That's an altered state of consciousness. Now, when you're in that level, now you're in the fifth dimension, technically. And now you can, now time will stand still. Remember, there's no time in the fifth dimension as we know it. And now you can receive, your thoughts are not necessarily schizophrenic mentalities with the classic conventional pinstripe, three-piece suit, phi-beta kappa key psychiatrist would say to you. What you're most likely doing there in the fifth dimension, now you can access parallel universes. You could be dealing with two adjacent parallel universes to the current, and there's your three thoughts.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Oh, you can control that, by the way. Try the fifth dimensional exercise. Yeah. You can control things like that and limit it to one, and maybe we can call you 1-2-3 instead of 3-2-1.
I've been trying to get them all three thoughts to work in unison.
I know. This is called. See, let me explain. One of my advanced out of body experience tape is a tape I have. It's called Alpha Synchronization. The purpose of that tape is not just to have you leave the body. Of course, it does, but to train you to synchronize the left hand, left brain and the right brain together, which not only increases your intelligence and concentration ability, but it removes this tendency to be disorganized or unfocused or just in la-la land, if you will. It really grounds you, if you will, okay? Without causing you to lose your creativity or things that people want to do, it grounds you and allows you to laser beam your thoughts and your actions. And that's what I call alpha sync. It's a technique that is very, very, it sounds exotic, but it's really pretty simple and it's a real trip. And I think you would do very well with alpha sync because what you're describing is you're beside yourself, literally, and that's not cool.
Give it a try, caller.
Where could I find out about that?
Just call the 1-800-KARMA-FOR-YOU number. If you got a computer, click onto Art's site. You'll get me on Art's site, and the information's on there, and I'll be more than happy to take care of you.
All right, thanks.
All right, thank you.
I want to talk about this cheating of the universe thing.
Yeah, like, oh, that's right.
This is an example. Suppose, for example, somebody needs money. I live in Los Angeles, right? So people say, Doctor, can I use your progression or your select your ideal future technique to go to Santa Anita? The old thing, right? Like, I haven't heard that before.
Yeah.
All right. Here's an example of a gentleman from the East Coast. I never worked with him. He just contacted me through the mail. He wanted to go into the future, and he ordered this little select your ideal future tape, if you will. It's part of a training program. And he was disabled. He was a workman's comp type of thing, but he didn't get much money for it. He got kind of messed over by the system or by his employer. So he didn't have much money. He was in debt. He needed several $1,000 to start a business. His wife was about to leave him. His kids, a lot of problems. And he said, Doctor, I just need money desperately. I got to do something. So he played the lottery in his home state every day. He always lost.
Right.
He used the tape, won exactly $5,000 in the state lottery, which was enough to get him going in his business. This was a couple of years ago. He communicated with me. He's doing well in his business. His relationships are back together again. He can work out of his home, so he doesn't have to worry about to and from with the physical disability that he has. And the universe decided that he could use it. The typical person who just wants money because they want to buy a Mercedes is not necessarily going to be in the universe's plan. You can't cheat the universe. This gentleman did not cheat the universe. The universe rewarded him. I don't make those decisions. It's made by people who are usually quite perfect, and therefore that's why you want to make sure your expectations are not just greed, but also have some sort of a base to it that will be a win-win-win situation.
And so it flows, huh?
And so it flows. I call that karmic capitalism. You attain abundance, you grow spiritually.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Dr. Goldberg?
Yes.
Yes. My name is Matt. I'm from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Okay.
First of all, my question is, what charge, if any, is there for the program that you're talking about now?
You're talking about what, this training program, this custom design, your destiny program you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. The albums are all on the website. These are 6 cassette albums. They're all $60 plus shipping, and they include several tapes in order for training, and the very last one is called Select Your Ideal Future. But they're all listed on the website, or if you call the 1-800-KARMA-FOR-YOU number, I'll send you a packet which will include if you don't have a computer. It's all detailed, and it explains each and every tape and what it's used for, and they're all self-hypnosis, and they're all easy to use.
Okay, and also, time travel is something that I've been interested in for a few years,
mm-hmm.
Ever since I first heard Einstein's theory on it.
Right.
What I wonder is, Is it possible for you to go... I understand that it's possible for it to go back in time.
Right. Okay. And forward.
Okay.
And sideways.
Well, yeah. But is it possible to change your history in this plane by changing certain events in the past?
Okay. The answer is actually yes. Time travelers have informed me that there is no such thing as history. I made this point very clearly in our last interview on July 26th in detail, but I'll just briefly summarize it. What we know of history, when you wake up in the morning, you assume that everything is nice and accurate and all the reporters spent all their night drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes and getting the news and thing. But what you don't know is that time travelers can alter anything anytime they want. You wake up, you think everything is normal, but in reality, it's different than it was the day before, but you don't know that because when you change the space-time continuum, it's like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. So we have no idea what history is. We think we do. It's like we think we know what time is. We haven't the slightest idea. When you cross into spirit, if you have a near-death experience or a regular out-of-body experience or what I call my conscious out-of-body experience is another technique I talk about. It's a different mentality. You then see what reality is. You see what the truth is. The truth shall set you free. And what that means is get rid of the physical body and you're free. But what we think of as time and history is a joke. It's the pimple on the universe, actually.
Let's talk for a second about what occurred to me in Paris, all right?
All right.
My perception of it was, when it was over, that it occurred very quickly. Now, that's a perception of time. Boom, boom, like that. But maybe that's not true. Or is it true?
Well, actually, what happens if you
In other words, is my perception of it being that quick accurate?
Yes, it can be, because let me give you a rule of thumb about time travel. If you're traveling back in time for several hundred years to a scene that takes place only a few seconds of time in that bygone era,
right.
It may take several minutes in your present time frame. It takes longer to go back in time. If you went into the future by several hundred years, it would require only a few minutes, possibly a few seconds. So if it seems that fast, you most likely went into the future. You aren't noting things on the Earth necessarily or who's going to win the next Parisian election or whatever.
No.
But the fact that it seems a short in time suggests the future. By the way, another thing is colors appear duller as you go back in time, whereas when you go forward in time, they get this sharpening of perception. It's almost like a psychedelic display that occurs as you go forward in time. And you were describing more of this shotgun effect with a blissful, you couldn't even describe the ecstasy.
That's right.
And I suspect there were, like, colors involved, too.
Yes.
Remember when you mentioned to me to see the movie Contact, which I did since our last interview?
Oh, you did?
The end of the last... I thought it was a terrible movie, with all due respect to the actors, but the last 20 minutes was worth the price of admission. That was a black hole, wormhole, white hole. That's the classic mentality of time travel. That's exactly what happens.
Well, I thought the first 10 minutes were worth the price of admission.
Oh, okay.
Remember
was,
when we were
fun.
Backing
yeah.
away
yeah.
from Earth? You remember that?
Yeah. That was fun. But I guess I like the idea of the Disney ride, you know?
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. Goldberg. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Art.
Sure.
I'm Samantha from Arizona, the true Grand Canyon state.
Indeed.
I'm listening to you on KOB out of Albuquerque.
The monster.
Are you bewitched, Samantha?
No. This is all really fascinating, and after my question, please teach us some simple methods to do some of this stuff you're talking about, okay? What I wanted to ask is if you know if there's any connection to any of this, that you're, all the things you're saying, with somnambulism. And I don't mean sleepwalking, but
what
somnambulism. It's like where your subconscious literally takes over your body once you go to sleep, and you seem normal to everyone, but you're actually asleep. Could this be a tie-in or a partial symptom of some of the things you're speaking of?
Okay, let me explain something. When you sleep at night, when you go into your dream, your REM cycle, you're automatically out of the body. Now, you're using the word somnambulism, but to a scientist, that means a deep level of hypnosis. It's like a theta-alpha combination, if you will.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter what you call it. They call it the Sandman, if you want. When you're sleeping, you're out of the body. You're recharging. Your cosmic radiation is recharging all your spiritual bodies. Your physical body is being recharged. Your astral, your causal, your mental, your etheric, your soul plane body. Therefore, you're in the space-time continuum, and time as we know it does not exist. It's all simultaneous. So you can do a lot of very weird, strange things, and it's going to be very disorienting if you're using it from the Earth plane perspective that you're using it now.
So I'm actually doing something while I'm doing it.